Value for value.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
Sunday, November 26, 2023. This is your award-winning Gitmo Nation Media Assassination, episode 1611.
This is No Agenda.
Reading PDFs so you don't have to. And broadcasting live from the heart of the Texas Hill Country here in FEMA region number 16 in the morning, everybody. I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where everybody's cutting Ukraine loose, I'm John C. Dvorak.
Crackpot and
Buzzkill
in the morning.
Oh, yeah, that's over. That is over. It's over. Goodbye.
Well, I think we luckily caught the Richard Haass moment on
Morning Joe.
Morning Joe.
Yeah, that was it. That was the giveaway.
Which was the signify to tell these people
it's over.
The ones that take the orders.
Yes, like Morning Joe.
Morning Joe, right at the top of the list.
Uh-huh.
Cut it out.
Done. It's over. I mean, you saw the articles that there's some secret agreement between the U.S. and Germany that insiders are talking about. Was it Bild who had that article?
Well, even better is I have a series of these clips.
Oh, he comes
which I
prepared.
Retrieved.
He comes prepared. Okay.
About Boris Johnson.
Ah, the warmonger, the peace spoiler.
And this was, I think, because this is getting out. It hasn't hit. It's not mainstream media USA, but it's around the world.
Well, you should probably set it up a little and explain because we've talked about this several times, just so people understand.
It's
what
been
happened.
Discussed.
Yeah, but so people really understand what's happening here. What happened?
It's going to be explained in these clips.
Okay, well, that's even better.
Boris Johnson kills peace deal one.
And turning to the conflict in Ukraine, where a top official in Kiev claims a peace deal with Moscow could have been reached last year. But the UK leader at the time, Boris Johnson, rejected the talks, insisting that the Ukrainians continue to fight.
In my opinion, the Russians really believed until the very end that they could have pressed us so we would accept neutrality. This was the main thing for them. They were ready to end the war if we accepted neutrality, like Finland once did, and that we make a commitment to not join NATO. When we returned from Istanbul, Boris Johnson came to Kiev and said that we would not sign anything with them at all, and let's just continue fighting.
This is the first time that a senior Ukrainian official, a very close associate of President Zelensky, and someone who was on the negotiation team from Ukraine, coming out and saying that these rumors were indeed true, that a peace agreement was almost in place, that Russia demanded chiefly neutrality, that Ukraine wouldn't join NATO, and that is why there was this push towards Kiev to pressure Ukrainian authorities. And then he confirmed something that many others have said since, that Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister of Great Britain, himself came to Kiev and he said, don't do it. Don't sign a peace agreement with the Russians. Continue with the war. And that was the turning point, allegedly, after which President Zelensky came out and said total war until they reach Ukraine's borders, template 1991.
You know, Boris Johnson doing that, and then, of course, he was no longer prime minister right after that because of the COVID scandals. It's a bit like when I told Joe Rogan to move to Austin, and then he moved and I was gone. And he's like, what are all these tents everywhere?
He moved to Austin, you were gone.
I was in the hill country. He's like,
you're getting him to move there as you're leaving. Here, buy my place.
Yeah, buy my place for $20 million. It's worth it. Come on. What do you think? There must have been some more in the deal there for Boris Johnson. He didn't just go say, hey, don't sign it. He must have said, hey, don't sign it. Here's some numbers. If you happen to be in Switzerland, they'll come in handy.
There may be something like that. None of it's really fully explained in these clips. I have a lot of them, though, because it goes really kind of brings out some details that we have not heard that I, at least that I know of. In fact, I have most of my clips today are about stuff I didn't know about. But let's go to part two, and there's a WTF moment here.
Since then, there has been a tremendous loss of life. Hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian soldiers killed, injured, huge swaths of the country, devastated. And now they're talking about negotiations again. Again, the first time that a senior Ukrainian official has come out and shared those details. And this comes at a time when in many publications around the world and from officials, from senior officials in Europe, in America, we're hearing the word peace negotiations, the words peace negotiations more and more, something that seemingly was anathema at the start of 2023, when there were these hopes that Ukraine could achieve victory through military means. At this point, it is important to mention that at this time, any calls for peace negotiations in Ukraine are punishable by law. Peace what? Negotiations with Russia are banned by law, a decree signed by Zelensky.
Did you know that?
No, of course not.
Well, you know, Zelensky canceled elections. He banned the church.
That's what democracy looks like.
And now, there's this little element. I can't find a reference to it. I can't say that I tried too hard.
Whose news reporting is this? Is NTD?
This is RT.
Oh, okay. Well,
so they're going to be slanted, but
yes.
But generally speaking, with stuff like this, they don't. They make their fact checking is not bad. So I have to assume that's true. Which would account for the lack of protests and people saying ceasefire and all that.
No kidding.
There's like been no protests in Ukraine. So
that's interesting.
That's fishy in and of itself, because there's tons of protests in Tel Aviv.
Oh, yeah. We got some of that later, for sure.
There's a bunch of protesting going on in Tel Aviv, yeah, there's
no... In front of Bibi's home, even. Here, last month... Hold on. Here it is. Last month, Ukraine passed a law prohibiting peace negotiations with Russia. It's not exactly the same thing. Also comes
it may from, be in that law that you can't talk about it.
Well, that's part good, because I got some don't talk about it stuff coming up after your series here. This is good
stuff. All right, well, here we go at part three.
Zelensky himself, nevertheless, this is a critical admission, perhaps a turning point, because many Ukrainians who have lost relatives, who have lost loved ones, who have been forced to flee, the hundreds of thousands of men who are abroad in Europe, in Russia, all over the world, trying to dodge the draft in Ukraine, the mobilization, they will ask the question, well, if it was that simple, was it worth it? Was it worth it continuing with the war, condemning hundreds of thousands to death, when all that Zelensky had to do was sign a peace agreement guaranteeing neutrality?
Okay, so now the conversation drifts over to something, another little factoid I was unaware of. And I'll explain, because it's not really explained in this clip. But go to clip four, where they bring on one of their new analysts, Tara Reid.
No, wait, Tara Reid, she went from accuser of Joe Biden of sexual assault to podcaster in Russia, to now RT correspondent?
Here we go.
And earlier, my colleague Robert Suchet spoke with the former U.S. Senate staff member, Tara Reid, on the choices that Ukraine has had to make.
The chain of events was this. They went to Turkey to negotiate this peace agreement towards the end of March. And then in April, Boris Johnson trotted down to Kiev and put a stop to it and said, you are absolutely not going to do this, for two reasons. He gave two reasons. His reasons were the West doesn't want this war to end, and you can't back down to Vladimir Putin. That was his position. And Kiev, of course, being, you know, the vassals that they are for the United States in this proxy war NATO is fighting against Russia via Ukraine, capitulated. And and said, okay, the war continues. Now you've lost a generation of Ukrainian men as a result. a peace that could have been achieved. Now, this all came out in even Ukrainian press in the summer. And in May and July, you saw some independent journalists covering that Boris Johnson put a stop to this. But it didn't get any lift in some of the major.
Oh, shock and horror, Tara. Yeah. You're telling me the mainstream media wouldn't report this?
Right.
But honestly, though, right? I mean, look, Boris Johnson, he goes to Kiev. He scuppers these talks. Mm-hmm. He scuttled the talks. Yeah. This could have saved the lives of hundreds of thousands of people. Tara, why do you think, because for such a long time now, we've heard the Western political and media landscape saying Russia doesn't want to talk peace, Russia won't negotiate. And yet, if you look at it now, it seems that what Zelensky's advisor is saying right now flies right in the face of that narrative that Russia was actually willing to sit at the peace table, but the UK, Boris Johnson, they scuttled the talks.
Now, just so I understand, when Russia was ready to talk, they were saying, we'll just keep status. Had they now already taken that territory, or were they going to just let it be wherever it was?
I think they were going to just let it be.
And it was just going to be, hey, as long as you promise not to. But why would Russia even take those terms? They know that we're not good for it. Yeah, come on.
You mean based on James Baker years ago, our top guy telling Russia, hey, don't worry about it. We're never going to move our NATO further east.
Hey, man.
Just kept doing it.
Hey, man, we didn't put it in writing, okay? If it's not in writing, doesn't count, C's.
So, that's not fully explained. But the Tara Reid thing is interesting, and I'll tell you why, which is something I didn't know. Hmm. She defected. She's now a Russian.
Yes, she, and you know who brought her there is the redhead. The redhead who.
Right, the redhead. Yeah, the Russian spy.
Not the original redhead, but the one that was integrated within the Republican Party. Patrick Byrne, it was his girlfriend for a while.
Yeah.
The Overstock guy. That's who.
I mean, it's great. So Tara Reid,
there's so much going on.
Who makes a credible accusation against Biden being a creep? Mm-hmm. Gee, we never noticed that before. And she gets rebuked by the Republicans by the Democrats. And I guess she gets so many threats, and she gives up on the idea of actually, you know, becoming, you know, a whistleblower about Biden being a creep. And she ends up defecting to Russia.
Well, just so you understand, she went to Russia to speak. She was invited to speak. And then she got word from, and she was cagey about it, because I heard a whole interview with her. I think it was actually a Megyn Kelly interviewed her, of all people. And she said, I'm getting word that if I go back to America, I will be arrested immediately. So that's why she stayed. And that's when she was, you know, like Snowden was given a Russian passport.
Well, she was definitely cajoled, and
but
to me the irony is that she starts off, you know, calling out Biden for being a masher, and then so she's like the woman scorned.
Yeah.
She goes to Russia. Now all she does is do reports on RT about what a jackass Biden is. This is kind of the key to these things, and she's just like a nightmare.
It's pretty interesting, though, you know, that she's
totally uncovered by the wire press.
Well, hello.
It's like nobody knows any of this.
You know that she's disinformation.
Yeah. So.
Wow, that's good.
So this is all unraveling. So I think they have to pull the plug on this whole thing.
Hold on a second. So do you think they have to pull the plug because of this? Or because it's just hopeless and no one, and the European countries, the American people, no one wants to support this anymore. I mean, it can't just be because it's unraveling, because now we're finding out that Boris Johnson went there to stop the peace deal.
No, I think this is an element. I think this is the straw that broke the camel's back. There's still the money laundering issues. There's the corruption issues. There's all the stuff going on. And this coming out,
true. Yeah,
because we're whining and moaning and groaning about one thing or another. And now it turns out this could have been peace a year ago. It would have saved American taxpayers billions.
And you've got mainstream comedians making jokes now on Netflix about Hunter Biden's corrupt Ukraine deals. It's so common knowledge now. no one believes any of it anymore. Or it's not credible. You know, the whole reasons for it is just not credible.
The credibility issue with the mainstream media is at an all-time low. Yeah. I was one of the reports, I was listening to something in our clips that'll be at the end of the show, where their CDC is moaning about 15% uptake in COVID vaccine boosters. 15% of the American public is taking a booster.
More than I expected, honestly.
Well, that's about what I expected. Actually, I expected a little more than 15, but the point is that the word has gotten out, and it's in contradiction to what the mainstream media is saying. Take your shot.
Hey, even masking. I mean, 6 months ago, everyone agreed, yeah, masks don't work. And they're just back to telling you to mask up.
Okay.
Well, the 15% of I feel sorry for those, the 15% of the people that just believe everything. So let's go with I think we're on clip four.
No, we're on clip five. Clip five.
As a matter of fact, in June of this last year, Vladimir Putin, President Putin, had showed the actual document of how Russia was withdrawing troops from Kiev and trying to, meet with this peace accord that they've made. They asked for two things. They wanted neutrality from Ukraine. Same thing they asked from Finland, right? Mm-hmm. They wanted neutrality, and they wanted not to join NATO. And these were the two demands. And of course, we all know what happened. Everything did not unfold that way. Boris Johnson intervened. Now, Boris Johnson was acting on the behalf of the U.S. as well as the U.K. And this has to do with money. This has to do with profits.
Here we go.
The Western military industrial machine. You complex. Had these weapons manufacturers that have made almost $1 trillion since the conflict has begun.
Unbelievable.
In fact, there was a recent call with some of these Western manufacturers, weapons manufacturers, Lockheed Martin and so on, talking about the profits that they've made. Yeah. So it's just been really horrible.
I mean, look, they just sent the Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin to Kiev a few days ago. The former UK PM Cameron was there as well. He's going to be some sort of peace envoy, whatever.
Right.
But Austin was there, and I was thinking, you know what? Why did they send America's biggest defense secretary there? Why? Because I think they sent him there to tell Zelensky, look, here's more money, but you know what? It's over. Because here's what we keep seeing, Tara, in the Western media and the political landscape, they keep talking about this stalemate in Ukraine. Oh, it's a stalemate. It's not going anywhere. Nobody's won. Nobody lost. It's over.
You know, it's almost like I would prefer to be corruption of the Biden crime family than the military industrial complex. If it's really truly is just because of the military industrial complex who wanted the $1 trillion after we pulled out of Afghanistan, that's really sad. The same guys who now, was it now 3.8 trillion they can't locate? I don't know. I don't know. Is there somewhere?
I just can't understand why they can't audit the Pentagon. It just makes no sense at this point.
Because they're afraid. Because everybody's on the take.
You can chop it into pieces and audit it. There's no reason you can't do it. We have plenty of accountants looking for work.
Everybody's on the take. Or they're blackmailed in some other nefarious way. Don't you think?
So it's got to be some reason. Well, but I think there's the last clip.
It's over.
Ukraine has lost. There's no stalemate anywhere across the board.
Yeah.
The West is not supplying the shells anymore. They haven't got the weapons to send anymore. They don't have the money to send anymore. Meantime, Russia continues to make stalemate. There is no stalemate. Hello, Western press, if you're listening, there is no stalemate. How is this going to wrap up? How much longer? Look, we've got Biden. We've got the presidential election next year. Of course, the political establishment wants to maintain the image that Ukraine's winning, that they will win, that Russia will lose. How are we going to get around this just in time for the election, do you think?
Well, I think the hawks are going to try to keep it going just a little bit longer because that's the military. Mm. You know, that's where they make their money. But bear in mind, too, there's the money laundering issue, right? That's all coming to light in Congress. All of the things that were happening with Ukraine and the money laundering that has to do with the politicians that are involved. And so they're trying to do duck and cover, and people are kind of taking each other out. So it's going to be really interesting to see how the movement towards the negotiations towards peace goes. But right now, Russia's in a position where they don't have to negotiate. They've been denazifying, moving steadily, as you said. And the tragedy is that a generation of Ukrainian men are dead.
Hey, I got to say, Tara Reid talks a good game. She's not bad as an analyst.
She sounds like a pro.
Like a pro. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't realize she does. I mean, she'd been doing those podcasts, you know, that warms her up. Well,
she do podcasting will make you a pro.
Okay. Now that's a bumper sticker. Podcasting will make you a pro. I think CNN is already starting to move the conversation about Ukraine, how Ukraine will win. It's no longer about the big money. Remember Zelensky? Just give me credit, man. Just give me credit. 40 billions of credit. Give me credit. No, we're not giving you credit. You got 100 million. Here, shut up. No, I think they're moving towards the Eric Schmidt solution.
But elsewhere tonight in Ukraine, there is no end in sight to the fighting. This week, an irritated Russian President Putin, rejected the obvious that Russia is pursuing a brutal war of aggression in Ukraine. CNN has been tracking stories of sacrifice that are happening there, and Anna Korn reports on the ordinary men and women who are now teaming up with drone operators to fight back for their country.
Here you go, drone operators.
On the outskirts of Kyiv, a soldier puts on a pair of goggles.
Welcome to OpenTX.
She's part of a unit testing the latest batch of drones that have just arrived. Some work. Some don't. But this is the place to find out before they're delivered to Ukrainian troops on the eastern and southern fronts. Some of these drones are from civilians, produced in homes on kitchen tables. They can be used for reconnaissance or assault missions.
All right, right there, I'm already really skeptical. Okay, so now civilians are at home at kitchen tables making drones that can carry payloads that can blow stuff up. Now this.
Yes, I heard this story too. And I found it very, it's like, I didn't clip anything about it because it just seemed ludicrous.
Well,
this is like the Chinese back in the 50s or 60s having steel mills in everyone's backyard.
Well, they did have smelters. They had smelters.
They had a pot of molten stuff, but it was useless. This is the same thing. This is useless.
This is a grassroots movement.
A grassroots army of civilians are heeding the call, including Vera and Alexander, encouraging others to do the same. Their operation has taken over their one-bedroom apartment. He makes drone parts with his 3D printer, while she creates camouflage dressings for soldiers' helmets.
3D printer, I'm making drone parts.
Their work acknowledged by grateful troops in Bakhmut, who sent them Ukraine's coat of arms made of bullets.
Instead of getting married and having a wedding, we spent that money to start making drones. Now we are happy without gold rings, but with the drones.
Yeah, the drones.
Companies like Victory Drones are training up civilians online to help build these little birds.
Yeah, and that makes sense now with the 100 million. That's the kind of money that Silicon Valley would want. That's what Eric Schmidt, who called for drone warfare, for creating Ukraine's drone building capability. When we say drones, it's small drones.
They're small.
Yeah, this is probably what the money is.
Bigger than a quadcopter, but smaller than a predator.
Yeah, much smaller than a predator. Here, Zelensky, go build some drones.
To then distribute to the military.
If you attach the payload to the bottom, if you attach the battery on top, you have a perfect shell, which is a guided missile.
Volunteer and soldier Gennady says to compete with Russia's industrial output, Ukraine must innovate or there will be no future. He's already lost his best friend, seen here in this video, singing lullabies to their children. He knows too well the painful price of this war.
When I'm saying innovate or die, I see eyes of people from my unit. I lost already. And obviously we have to win this war because otherwise the sacrifice was fruitless.
There you go.
Even the next generation is getting involved. The military has begun training school kids, some as young as first graders.
My name is Sophia. I'm 6 years old. I like flying drones and protecting the country.
And there are even plans to make this part of the nation's education system.
There you go.
Anna Corrin, CNN.
This is disgusting. You're right. Tara Reid was right. A generation of men slaughtered for no reason other than for the military industrial complex. With old crap we sent them so we could enrich our own companies here and in Europe. And the money stopped flowing a while ago. We had the clips of the European Union defense honcho saying, hey, you know, if we don't get any orders, we're not going to build. So until you get an order, it's going to take a while. It'll take a year because there's no orders. The money's done. It stopped.
Yeah, it has to be done.
And so now and now they're indoctrinating six-year-olds to fly drones for your country.
Yeah.
It's... I mean, this whole is evil. The whole system is evil.
It's pretty bad.
I can't think of any other term than just evil.
At the end,
evil. Evil. Yeah.
Kicker. And then nobody seems to think that this is sick when you listen to these reports on CNN.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it is. Really a little is. Kid. I mean, shouldn't be dealing with this.
No.
And if, by the way, I thought all the kids were rousted from Ukraine and sent to Poland and taken to Russia and every place in between.
Now, here we go. So now we get to the disinformation. And there's something going on right now. There is a push, and it's global. It's United Nations related. And this, and a couple of things just kept on coming through. I'm like, hold on a second. What is happening here? And I discovered something that fits right in with the canary in the coal mine was the Westminster Declaration. Remember the Westminster Declaration?
Oh yeah,
which is a bunch of bloggers and podcasters, all well-meaning, I'm sure. Matt Taibbi, Glenn Greenwald.
Yeah, of course they're well-meaning.
And Article 19. Article 19 is all about Article 19 of the Universal Human Rights Declaration. I'll get to that in a minute, but first let's see. Now, this came out over a week ago, and this was yet another kind of red flag saying something is coming because, of course, Kathy Hochul, the unelected governor of New York, is going to be in on the elitist messaging.
Today, I'm directing the director of Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Services to develop media literacy tools for K-12 in our public schools. This will teach students and even teachers to help understand how to spot conspiracy theories and misinformation, disinformation, and online hate. Start talking about what we're seeing out there. Give the teachers the tools they need to help these conversations in school.
Mm-hmm.
And by teaching younger New Yorkers about how to discern between digital fact and digital fiction, we can better inoculate them from hatred and the spread of it, and help prepare them for a very fast-moving and often confusing world.
We identified this stuff a decade ago when the bullying in school became bullying laws and was all hate speech and hate laws. And very ill-defined, what is hate? What is hate speech? And of course, this is now rearing its ugly head in Europe with the majority win of seats in the House of Parliament in the Netherlands, Geert Wilders, not enough to govern. He needs a coalition. And of course, no one wants to go along with the hate speech guy.
Hello and welcome to Talking Europe. It's an election result that has sent shockwaves across the EU.
Shockwaves!
By all expectations, the Dutch far-right Freedom Party has won 37 seats, well ahead of its rivals. It's led by a man who's long been the bête noire of European liberals and Muslims.
Bête noire?
Geert Wilders.
The bête noire. Is that the black sheep? The bête noire? Isn't that black sheep? Is that French for... Bête noire?
It has a very specific... We should look it up so we can read it.
Yes.
It has a very specific meaning in a political sense.
Yeah, why don't you look that up while we listen to Le Bête Noire.
Muslims. Geert Wilders advocates what he calls the de-Islamization of the Netherlands, as well as zero asylum seekers and tougher border management. Well, migration and asylum is one of the key policy areas of my guest today. Margaritis Schinas is a vice president of the European Commission, and he's co- coordinating the commission's work on a new pact on migration and asylum.
So the intro here is not far from the truth. Geert Wilders has said, look, no more asylum seekers. We're a small country. No more Islamification.
All makes sense.
All no more Islamification of the country, which is very specific to the Netherlands, as you know, statues have had to go, street signs have had to go, all these things, the culture of the Netherlands has all changed. You know,
the bête noire.
Bête noire, tell us.
Bête noire is a person, a simple definition, a person or thing that one particularly dislikes.
Ooh, dislikes, yes. So the intro guy here, I think it's France 24, is being reasonably true. Because there has been no, and I guess the big problem for the EU guy who's about to speak as guest is Geert Wilders is saying we should have a binding referendum, always a problem. You know, having phony baloney voting is one thing, but now a binding referendum, whether the Netherlands should exit the EU, a so-called Nexit. That's really the problem, but let's see what the EU immigration officer VP doodly doot says.
Is it a setback for the European way of life?
Well, this remains to be seen. 25% of Dutch voters voted for Geert Wilders, but 75% didn't.
This is my favorite. There's 17 or 18 parties. There's the animal party. You can't just say they didn't vote for him as if, well, that, you know, he's kind of insinuating they didn't like what he had to say.
He makes it sound like a binary.
Exactly. It's not, thank you. It's not binary. People voted for the 50 plusers, for the 50 plus party, which got zero seats in the House. Not thanks.
So when the government will be formed, the first thing that would be quite interesting to see is whether all this hate rhetoric that
there it is.
Shaped his campaign.
Rhetoric that shaped his campaign. That is patently not true.
Will be translated into a government program that we don't know yet. So I would very much like to give the next government a chance to see whether their government program will reflect this hate speech that we have been hearing during the campaign. In any case, the European model of society is fully incompatible with any form of discrimination or hate.
Now, Phoebe's hating something. So yes.
Wow, this guy was just that's a biased report if I ever heard one. I have some clips on this.
Well, do you want? Okay, let me come back to my hate speech because I'm on a roll here.
Okay, finish.
Well, what do you have? Maybe it fits in. What do you have?
No, this is about the right wingers taking over the world.
Oh no. We'll get back to that.
Specifically, Holland.
Yeah, we'll get back to that. It'll make sense. Because I want to get back to the Westminster Declaration, Article 19. So taking place right now in Turkey, is the, what are they calling this thing? The Stratcom Summit.
In times of war and crisis, disinformation can be used as a powerful weapon to spread lies to the masses in an instant. In this era of uncertainties, humanitarian and environmental crises, and regional instability, truth-based, transparent media has never been more important.
Truth-based, transparent media. Remember that. Remember that
that's
line.
A good one.
Remember that line.
Addressing this, prominent leaders and experts from around the world are gathered here in Istanbul for the International Communications Strategic Summit, Stratcom. The goal of the summit is to create a clean communication ecosystem in the fight against disinformation. And with the rise of new technologies like...
What did she call a clean? I'm going to hear that again. Hold on a second.
The goal of the summit is to create a clean communication ecosystem.
A clean communication...
A clean communication ecosystem. So these guys are just full of themselves.
Oh, totally. Well, this is the money...
Creating phrases that sound kind of cool.
This is the money. money train
in the fight against disinformation. And with the rise of new technologies like AI, this battle is getting even more challenging.
The annual summit is organized by the Republic of Turkey's Directorate of Communications and is taking place over 2 days. This year's theme is Global Response to Hybrid Threats, Stability, Security, and Solidarity.
And the solidarity is evident here with over 1,000 participants, 60 speakers from nearly 30 countries, and 100 officials from over 40 countries.
When you're talking about people up to no good, they're playing on the fact that emotionally people get manipulated a lot. You have to be critical consumers of information. Just as we read labels in the grocery store, we're looking at the carbohydrates, it's like gluten-free. We're not doing that enough online or the way we consume information.
But the battle against disinformation doesn't end here. We each have a role to play as we consume and share media. Will we accept it all as fact, or will we think critically about it?
So you're right. What that lady just said, one of the attendees, that is what NewsGuard does. It's putting a label, an ingredient. I hear it all day long from the podcast industrial complex. Well, yes, we need labels on podcasts so you know what you're getting if you want to advertise on it, or you know what you're getting if you are going to listen to it. Because, yes, this podcast contains elements of Hitler.
Or Trump loves Hitler.
Stuff like that. So what comes out is this article from Reclaim the Net, and it's a big kind of red herring. The headline is World Economic Forum backs UNESCO's push to regulate speech on social media, pushes its own toolkit, digital safety, which will tackle hate speech and cyberbullying. So the point of this is to go and, you know, look.
Sounds like a panic to me. If I've ever heard anything that sounds desperation, everything you're playing right now is it.
Well, it's a distraction from what's really happening. So Reclaim the Net is pointing you to go look at the World Economic Forum. Those douchebags, they want to censor speech on social media. And by the way, before we even dive into this, these two documents, you said one or two shows ago, this is the golden age of the internet, golden age of podcasting, because it's all going to end. Anything that you get from a platform is going to end. And podcasting 2.0, of course, will not. And if you still publish a blog with an RSS feed, you'll be okay. But platforms are going away, and here's why. So once you dig into this World Economic Forum article with their toolkit, there's a little document from UNESCO. Now, for people who don't know what UNESCO is, let me get the exact acronym. United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. Usually you only hear about UNESCO as it pertains to historical sites.
Yeah.
It's a UNESCO World Sanctioned Site. But UNESCO is about education and scientific. So they come out with this document, Guidelines for the Governance of Digital Platforms, Safeguarding Freedom of Expression and Access to Information Through a Multi-Stakeholder Approach. Remember, United Nations is built of member states and stakeholders, the United States being one of them. So they have guidelines for an internet of trust. What did we hear earlier? Was her trustworthy media? I forget what the
it
woman
was,
said.
I'll tell you what it was. It was truth-based, transparent media.
Yes. I have a couple things highlighted. Safeguarding freedom of expression and the right to information while dealing with dis and misinformation. Remember, this is all coming from the Julie Andrews of the Ministry of Truth. Remember the singing lady who was dismissed, who was working for Homeland Security? She got kicked out because this is all her terms. Dis and misinformation. Okay. Dealing with dis and misinformation, hate speech, and conspiracy theories. So you can't have conspiracy theories now. Requires a multi-stakeholder approach. Okay, so all right, this is nothing new. Then they have guidelines for the governance of digital platforms. So I'm going to scroll down here. There's a couple of things I highlighted, which led me to the key document. As virtual spaces for social interact, this is a 56-page document, by the way. As virtual spaces for social interaction, they, digital platforms, are beholden to algorithms designed to monopolize our attention, inadvertently favoring misinformation and hate speech by prioritizing clicks over certainty, probability, and proof. Faced with the global nature of these issues, we need to develop consistent responses around the world and avoid the fragmentation of regulations or approaches that compromise human rights. It is precisely the global challenge to which UNESCO must rise, for it is at the core of our mandate. And here it is. Let us remain focused on our goal, combating hate speech and misinformation while preserving freedom of expression. This is not a contradiction. By bolstering...
No, what? Sounds like one to me.
By bolstering access to free and reliable information, we also enhance freedom of thought and expression. Listen to this. By bolstering, so by making more access to free and reliable information more voluminous, with that we actually enhance freedom of thought and expression, as long as it's the reliable information. In the words of Hannah Arendt, who was Hannah Arendt? I should have looked her up.
Hannah Arendt.
Who was?
She's a very famous. I believe she was a sociologist or an anthropologist or something along those lines. But she's a writer. Mm-hmm. And
I love you for knowing this.
I love you for knowing this. I don't remember too much about it.
In the words of Hannah Arendt, freedom of opinion is a farce unless factual information is guaranteed and the facts themselves are not in dispute. Dude, you grew up on that stuff?
Yeah, okay. It would be like Cal Berkeley. Hannah Arendt was a German-born American historian and philosopher. She was one of the most influential political theorists of the 20th century. Of course I'd read her.
So here comes the thing that led me right to the money shot. So now they get into some of the, you know, this a lot of words, a lot of references. And remember, we're going back to the Westminster Declaration by some of the prominent podcasters and bloggers in America saying, you know, the online platform shouldn't be censoring us when we're doing reporting. And it's Article 19 of human rights. The guideline, here it is, point three. The guidelines for platforms, that the application of rules and regulations in every governance system must adhere to international human rights standards, including with Article 19 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. Whoa! I read that Article 19 and I thought it was of the Human Rights Declaration, but there's a different Article 19, coincidentally, and that is Article 19 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. I'll get to that in a moment, which provides that any restriction to freedom of expression must be provided by law. Again, any restriction to freedom of expression must be provided by law. Pursue a legitimate aim as set out.
Wait. It's a convoluted sentence.
What they're saying is if you want to restrict freedom of expression, or they don't say freedom of speech, they say freedom of expression, yeah, you can, as long as it's provided by law.
Hence, Zelensky putting the lid on anybody using the word peace negotiations.
Yes, exactly. Which provides that any restriction to freedom of expression must be provided by law, pursue a legitimate aim as set out in the provision, and must be necessary and proportionate. Okay, so then I go to Article 19 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, the ICCCPR. This is a 20-page document, and it is best practices and lessons learned on how protecting and promoting human rights contribute to preventing and countering violent extremism. So this is how they lay out how free expression is protected, unless we make a law against something which we all agree just can't happen. The submission focuses on the compliance of initiatives and programs aimed at preventing or countering violent extremism with international freedom of expression standards. In the annexes to the submission, which includes further materials, issued by Article 9. So this is all in the fine print of your Human Rights Declaration. The right to freedom of expression is protected by Article 19 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which is elaborated upon and given legal force in Article 19 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. That's this document. These guarantees are replicated in many other international human rights instruments, as well as in regional counterparts. Though the right to freedom of expression is fundamental, it is not absolute. It is not absolute. Article 19, ICCPR, for example, places the onus on states party to justify any limitations they place on the rights are provided by law, pursue a legitimate aim, and are necessary to the legitimate aim and proportionate. Well, this is bull crap, because it boils down to this: activities that aim to threaten the enjoyment of human rights and fundamental freedoms and democracy, and threaten territorial integrity and the security of states, and destabilize legitimately constituted governments. So if you have hate speech against the government, they can shut you down. And they call this violent extremism. A broader phenomenon than terrorism. It captures both an ideology and conduct presumed indicative of a future propensity to violence. Dude, they are shutting it down. They've had this going for a long time. It's legal. And thank God for our Constitution, our First Amendment. But it's totally under attack with this, because we are, after all,
been under attack forever.
But this is a legal attack. And the violent extremism, these are the terms they've been using over and over again for years. It's hate speech.
So to wrap up what you've just said here.
Yes.
The people who signed off on that Westminster, whatever it is,
Westminster
called,
Declaration.
The Declaration are doofuses.
Either complicit or they're not
complicit. Let's assume that.
Okay, we'll assume.
But the fact is that they've basically signed a death warrant.
Yes.
In essence, even though it's going to mean nothing, and it means nothing from the get-go, it's just a bunch of guys' signatures. But it's beside the point.
They'll be the first to
symbolically,
go.
Symbolically, they signed their own death warrant, and they don't even know it.
And if you look at the UK, who was already way on board with this.
Or Canada.
Well, yeah, I'm going to use the UK for a moment, because, you know, this big pro-Palestine protest going on, all organized, of course, by the Labour Party. The Met Police handed out a leaflet that warned against language that breaks the law. Language. I just want to repeat this. Americans can't, well, a lot of them can, but most Americans can't even fathom this sentence. There's language that breaks the law.
Yeah, it's like thought crimes.
The leaflets warn protesters not to use words or images that are racist or incite hatred against any faith, that support Hamas or any other banned organization, as it is illegal under UK law to support such terrorist organizations, or, here it is, that celebrate or promote acts of terrorism such as the killing or kidnap of innocent people. In America, you can do that. You may be a dick, but you can do that.
Yeah, I would say that church, the God Hates Fags church,
yeah,
is a perfect example.
And Nazis can walk around and do their Heil Hitler stuff and walk around with their little goose stepping. And the ACLU used to protect them.
Used to defend them.
Yeah, I guess not. But that's part of a true open society and democracy. It's closing in quick, but they're going to go after every single platform. Anything that's a platform, anything that you believe is the internet, it's going to be under the, it's already really under these rules. They're just going to formalize it. And they're doing it. And now you got the money, and everyone's sucking up the money there in Turkey with the Stratcom conference. Yeah, we got all kinds of news guard. We got all kinds of filters. We got all kinds of stuff. We can track people down, put our hobnail boot on their neck. This is exactly what is happening. So, yes, way to go, Westminster boys, Westminster Declaration boys. Yeah, look into that. Report on that for a second, please.
No, they're too high. They're actually pretty glib about that.
I think Matt Taibbi, if he really looked at it, because he's kind of wrapped up, and you know, the IRS came to his door, and he got, for the first time, he's figured out the government hates him because they hate everybody, all citizens. He's a little wrapped up in it, you know, and he's still a babe. He's still innocent. Oh, come on, let us report on social media. No. No, you've got that wrong, Matt. And please get off of Substack. Back to blogs. That's it. Back to blogs. We got to go back to using the network, not the platforms.
Well, I don't know how that relates to the right wingers that took over Europe or are taking over Europe.
Well, but they're shutting them down.
They're going how far they get. I think that, you know, talk is, it's a big deal to talk a lot, but.
It's easy to shut down.
Implementation is a problem.
It's easy to shut down people. John, children today, they think the internet is their iPhone. Hey, I got Google. I got the internet. They got apps. Apps. Oh, come on.
People. Well, they always thought the web was the internet, too, if you really want to go back.
Yes,
to it.
It was. It still is. But the web is the internet.
Never was.
The web. No, but the web is an open communication hyperlinking system that runs on the internet.
It's on top of the internet.
Yeah, but it's one step closer to, it's not a platform. The web is not a platform. Twitter is a platform. Facebook is a platform. Google is a platform. Your iPhone app store is a platform. These are platforms that they will regulate to their own desire. The web is still the last place.
I would say, going back to your initial thesis, which you did not bring up in this presentation, that the platforms aren't going to go away because they're the ones that are going to co-opt
yes.
the government regulations to benefit them.
Yes, I agree. That's what I'm saying. Of course they're going.
So Meta will be around.
They don't know. It'll be around, but it won't be a place to get any word out. Because it will be a clean communications ecosystem.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good luck. Yeah. It's hard to, they don't have enough bots to help.
I can tell you right now, we're not on Spotify. We never were. We're going to get kicked off of Apple. It will happen. This podcast will not be on the Apple Podcast app. I can tell you right now. Because of conspiracy theories and possible hate speech.
What conspiracy theory? We have never pushed a conspiracy theory on this show.
We didn't land on the moon.
Well, that's you, not the show. And that predates the show.
I got to step up my game then.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
Yes, please take it to the right wingers. I'm sure
back,
we can tie
back
this
to
in.
The right wings in the election. So I went to. Of all places, NTD.
Well, of course, it's your go-to. We love NTD.
And they had a guy on, and I unfortunately, this is not a great interview because the connection to the guy is no good. I tried running it through Adobe. One of those situations where there's certain things Adobe can't do, and it just makes it worse. And this is one of those interviews that happened.
Oh, goodness.
It turns out, I was thinking about this, the Adobe product is really only good for echoey voices in a big room, you know, which is typical of a lot of podcasts.
I agree.
They're using a camera, then you're using the mic on the camera to do the audio.
It clears that up really well. It doesn't do very well. Yes, I agree. You can get a pay for an enhanced version where you can determine the amount.
I doubt if it's any better.
It's not. Can I give you a tip?
A tip?
Yes, a tip. There's another website called Vocal Remover. Let me just see what it is.
What's the name of it?
Hold on a second. VocalRemover.org. And with this, you can split up between music It's really for songs, music, and vocals.
Yeah, it's for karaoke.
Yeah, but it works very well by removing background noise, which it will detect as music. And I've used that on a couple. In fact, the that clip from Turkey, I used that on, and it really cleaned it up without messing with the vocal track, like making it all singy and skippy. Yeah, it's a good, and it's open source. It's a value for value. Just tip the guy a little.
Value for value.
Yes, it's value. That's it. That's correct. Value for value.
All right, let's go to right wingers in elections won.
In addition to New Zealand, right leaning politicians have scored recent victories in the Netherlands and Argentina. Is this a worldwide trend? We spoke with Daniel Lacaille, chief economist at Tresis, to find out more.
Daniel Lacaille, thank you so much for joining us. Great to have you back on the show. You're actually currently in the Netherlands. That's where you're joining us from. And that's after an outsider won the election there. This follows a similar one that we just saw in Argentina as well. How much did the current economic factors in those countries play into these election wins?
Quite a bit, actually. If you think of what has made such a drastic change in the political landscape in the Netherlands, it is because of elevated inflation, continuous intervention from the government affecting the primary sector, agriculture, etc. So basically a drastic reaction against the negative inflationary and economic situation, but also the views on immigration and on government intervention on environmental issues. In the case of Argentina, it's the desperate situation of the economy in Argentina. It's got 140% inflation, 40% poverty, and on top of that, in a country that produces oil and has an incredible farming industry, there's scarcity of gasoline and scarcity of meat.
Yeah, I'm going to call bullcrap on this guy because it was not because of inflation. The number one reason was asylum seekers has been going on for 20 years. And the fact that they're
in Argentina?
No, in the Netherlands. Argentina,
no,
he's correct.
About Argentina. Oh, the Netherlands. Well, he talks about
the Netherlands
a little more specifically.
I know, but he said, oh, no, it was inflation, cost of living, intervention from the government. And then he says, oh, yeah, and some immigration. No, immigration was top of the list. It's okay. The two are incomparable, is what I'm saying.
Okay, incomparable. So
incomparable. Thank
I think it's interesting that he mentioned you can't get meat in, of all places, Argentina, which is it's, the meat eating country.
Yes, we go to the Argentine. They should just go to the Argentinian restaurant there. That's where you get the meat.
They're all meat, and more meat. Yeah. Well, there's a factoid that comes out in here that's new to me. One of our producers wrote me a note telling me about it, but I told him we have a clip that's going to discuss it. But there's two parts left. The first part is about Holland.
I want to get to Argentina, but sticking with the Netherlands first. Wilders is seeking a Dutch Brexit in the Netherlands, noting the climate policies that are really hurting the farmers in particular. But what can one man do? What do we expect to see here?
Well, I think what we can expect at least is a significant reversal of the misguided so-called environmental policy, because they're not environmental, they're interventionist policies. They haven't really improved. In fact, they have worsened the situation for the people in the Netherlands. So I think quite a big reversal in that front, and quite a strong reversal as well in both the economic policies inside the Netherlands, but also regarding the European Union, because the Netherlands is suffering elevated inflation because of the monetary policy of the European Central Bank, and also a dire economic environment when it should not be in such a situation due to the many of the policies that have been imported from the European Union. So all those things can be tweaked and at least improved upon.
Again, I'm just surprised that he doesn't really mention immigration.
Yeah,
and he's there.
Almost went out of his way not to.
He's there. He's there. That's the thing. He's there.
Well, let's go on to the, we'll just take that for what it is, but let's listen to what's going on in Argentina.
Speaking of inflation, you did mention now turning to Argentina, the 140% inflation over there now. Javier Milei is saying he's going to shut down the central bank, calling that non-negotiable. How much does the central bank fit into the inflation we're seeing?
Well, certainly the central bank is one side of the coin and a very important one, obviously printing pesos in a way that is completely incredible. But that's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is fiscal policy. The country that has more protectionist measures than many of the communist regimes that we know, like Cuba or North Korea. So it needs to open the economy, it needs to cut spending, and it certainly needs to stop printing pesos and stop this inflationary nightmare.
Milei is an economist, and now he says he does have a plan to fight inflation, and that's dollarization. He is wanting to change the pesos to the U.S. dollar. How likely is that to succeed?
Well, it's inevitable, because one of the problems in Argentina is that many of the politicians did not want to recognize the big elephant in the room, which is that the peso is a completely invalid currency that has failed. Argentina has more than 15 different exchange rates of the peso, all of them completely false, implemented by the government. And the peso is not used by citizens in Argentina whenever they can. So actually, dollarization is already evident within the Argentine economy, because no Argentine citizen, I mean, at least no sane Argentine citizen, is saving in pesos. And certainly, all of the relevant transactions and purchases that Argentine citizens implement are already dollarized.
I find it interesting that they're going to switch to the U.S. dollar as their currency.
Well, we talked about this on the last show.
But we talk about it all the time, because people, you know, it's like it's the reserve currency for the world.
But here's the thing.
But to do it officially is what I think is in. I don't know anyone else who's done it officially.
Well, it's not entirely clear, because it says dollarization. So, I mean, to shut down the central bank to then get the Federal Reserve central bank. Woo! What a difference.
Well,
woo!
Well, it won't be 140% inflation.
No, but it'll. Okay. You get my point. I mean, structurally, it's the same basic idea. But that, I mean, there's a lot that has to happen before that can take place. Pegging the dollar to the peso would be possible.
Well, that's different than
dollarization. I know it's different. But
that's
We'll have to see what he can do. I mean, he doesn't have a majority in parliament. He's just the prime minister. I mean,
we'll see what he does.
President.
I think it's fascinating that that's what he wants to do. I mean, they have pegging to the dollar is not new. I mean, I think they may have even done that in Argentina years back, but I know it's been done in Brazil. But even when they did it, when they went from the Cruzeiro to the real, which the real meaning real, was pegged 1-to-1 to the dollar, but now it's like 2.5-to-1. I mean, it just doesn't hold up. Which would be different than the dollar, which would hold up.
It's interesting that Saudi Arabia and China just announced a $7 billion local currency swap line, which is a good way to peg your money to the yuan and get it away from the dollar. It's like a start in a sequence of things.
Well, the problem with the yuan, in my opinion, is that it's rigged.
It's phony.
More than the dollar is.
It's of course, but they just don't want to be beholden to us anymore. Yeah, we got a new guy, new boss, same as the old boss. It's just they're tinier. Yeah, I don't know. They don't go and kill as many people, just their own. So just sticking with Europe, not reported. Okay, so what has been reported is we have lots of immigration clashes. Dublin, Ireland, which immediately was called, the far right wing nut jobs. It was a rumor started by them, and it was not true. But yes, there was indeed an immigrant who stabbed several people, including children, and Dublin You know, it was called the Irish Welcome, as the Guardian writes. And there's no more Irish Welcome. The Irish are sick of it. The Dutch are sick of it. Didn't hear about, even Conor McGregor, MMA fighter, says, yep, this is a problem because there's just a revolving door on immigration with a gravy train upon arrival. People don't like it. In France, didn't even hear about this. The French village's winter ball, knife attack, killing a 16-year-old boy, injuring 17 people. And this immigrant told guests, we're here to stab white people, before he started to stab white people. So this is not stuff that people like. Now, here's the kicker. European lawmakers approved plans on Wednesday to remove the national veto for EU member states. A total of 291 members of European Parliament supported the proposal put forward by the Verhofstadt group. Remember Guy Verhofstadt? The guy, the guy who was all against the, you know, the Belgian guy who was all against Brexit and was making a big problem. The arch federalist. So the vote was passed by a majority of just 17. So now a European country like the Netherlands can no longer have a veto on laws they don't like. Didn't hear about that anywhere. Goodbye sovereignty.
What would make the European Union so appealing if you have no power whatsoever?
Yeah, well, that hence Nexit. You know, I don't think Geert Wilders is going to get a parliament together. The VVD, which was the current majority, or was the majority party before the election, in coalition, so they had kind of a center rightish, I guess, government, very, very slight rightish. They said, well, we don't want to be in a coalition with the PVV, which everyone was kind of counting on. Said, but we will, whatever they want, we'll just agree with them. It's going to be very hard for him to form this thing. You know, he can get, you know, there's a couple of weird new parties which got, you know, he can get the Farmer Party in there, but he still needs 76 and he's at 37. It's not going to be easy. It just may not happen, which will mortify people in the Netherlands. It's very interesting to watch. It's very, because I think that where the Netherlands goes, so the rest of Europe goes. And you're right. If you don't have a veto, if you can't stop something completely ludicrous, why would you want to be in it?
You know, that makes no sense.
You've already got Fifi Lagarde running your bank. You know, soon, so much nuttiness. Meanwhile, here in America, this was very interesting. CBS Sunday did a story between two CBS journal or two journalists, where the journalists were the story. And
oh, nothing like journalists interviewing journalists.
And they didn't have a single outside person in this six-minute piece. Tim Alberta has written I think he's mainly an Atlantic writer. His dad was a preacher or pastor at a church. He grew up in the church. And well, wouldn't you know it, the church is being hijacked by Trump. The church is political. It's no good. And we have to have a book out, which now these two journalists, what's the other guy's name? The CBS guy is Robert Costa. And he interviews Tim Alberta about the white evangelicals.
Alberta's reckoning with faith and politics is the basis for his new book, The Kingdom, the Power and the Glory, which documents what he calls an age of extremism for evangelicals.
There was a real crisis in the American church, specifically a crisis in the white evangelical church.
About a quarter of American adults identify as evangelical. And as the Republican presidential race heats up, nearly 70% of white evangelicals are supportive of Trump. Alberta says that reflects a shift away from norms in the GOP and in the church.
We should think about the American church almost in parallel to American politics. When it gains enough influence, when it gains enough power, the fringe can overtake the mainstream. And that's what we've seen happen in the church.
to the east.
The convulsions in today's churches come after decades of evangelicals gaining influence.
Do you love God? Do you love him with all your heart? With all your soul?
From Billy Graham's stadium crusades to the stadium rallies of Donald Trump. Great.
But you know, we have our Christian conservatives today, and they're in the room. Let's go.
Trump!
In recent years, evangelicals have had debates over the response to COVID and to Trump, all while many key Republicans count themselves as one of them.
What I find most interesting, there's one more clip here. What I find most interesting is the Democrat Party has actually been doing this for decades. And it was a man, I learned all this from Mo, but it's right out there. Who is one of the big promoters of the Democratic Party amongst Black America? Al Sharpton. Oof. Name another one.
Oh, yeah.
Jesse Jackson. What are they? Yeah. Reverends. The Democrat Party has always said,
they don't like the idea this is happening to them.
Exactly.
Against them. What's interesting is I like the tricky use of association. So you have Billy Graham in front of a huge audience.
Yeah, from 1960 or something, 1968.
It doesn't matter when. Yeah. But there are these guys, and they get in front of it. Well, I'd say the preachers on TV that are in front, they're in the stadiums, mm-hmm. Those guys, the mega church guys. So they got a big, giant audience, and then they switch to Trump in front of a big, giant audience. And so you make the association there's something going on. You know, you could have done the same thing by having Taylor Swift in front of a big giant audience and then putting Trump in there and claiming that he's a rock and roller. I mean, this is bull crap.
Here we go.
What do you say to evangelical leaders who might hear your argument and say, you missed the point? Trump wins for evangelical Christians. He wins for conservative.
Wins America. What?
Supreme Court seats, a seat at the table. At the White House.
Show me where in Scripture any of that matters.
But it does matter to many of those standing with Trump as he once again seeks the White House.
You had millions of evangelical Christians who voted for Donald Trump and just sort of gleefully embraced his.
See, this is where I would have expected here to have a whole bunch of Christians going, yeah, God told me to vote for Trump, but they don't have any of that. They just connect it.
It's because it doesn't exist, but. Why don't we go back and he makes it when one point is made, he says, show me in Scripture where that matters. Well, his whole thesis, show me in Scripture where any of what he says matters.
Exactly. Exactly. This is an interesting hit piece.
Does matter to many of those standing with Trump as he once again seeks the White House.
You had millions of evangelical Christians who voted for Donald Trump and just sort of gleefully embraced his...
Gleefully
embraced.
Why is he using gleefully? I mean, this guy is a propagandist. This is only people that watch this besides us are left wingers and middle of the road. Nobody cares. Whoever's bored enough to watch 60 Minutes in its current iteration, which is not a good show, I might add. It's very dull, and
it's CBS Sunday, not 60 Minutes. CBS Sunday.
Oh, even worse,
Jane Pauley special.
A Jane Pauley show. Nobody watches Jane Pauley show. It's well structured. As a pro, she's like really good. But
and they got this Atlantic writer who grew up in the church, and then I think he basically left to become a political reporter. I'm not sure if he's a Christian anymore or not.
No, he's probably not. He's probably an atheist.
But let's continue. Not much left.
Terrible rhetoric and his unchristlike conduct.
Why? His unchristlike conduct.
Is he supposed to be Christ? What?
Hey, Christians.
I'm not electing Christ.
The whole point is we're all sinners, you douche.
Terrible rhetoric and his unchristlike conduct.
Why did they gleefully embrace it, to use your term?
Power, sure.
Trump campaigned for president in 2016, promising that if he was elected, Christians would have power. And he gave it to them.
Where?
I never saw that.
I never heard that.
Did you hear this? I never heard that. All I remember is they're going to build the wall and Mexico's going to pay for it. How come they don't harp on that? That's a good one. Mexico's never paid for any of the wall. So, I mean, why don't you go after him on stuff he actually said?
He gave it to them in ways that arguably no American president has in modern history.
Holy crapola. He gave stuff that no, it's amazing, but what is it?
And when you have power, you can very quickly lose sight of your principles, your values, even your beliefs.
How's your faith?
You know, honestly, it's never been better.
Oh. Tim Alberta's faith in reporting is also strong. Satan. And he says that is his own calling.
You and I were reporters.
That's right.
We're not supposed to be the story. I never wanted to be the story. Once you see this, you can't look away.
Dude, this is such bullcrap. This is such bullcrap. I was in church this morning. I get up very early to do that and still do my show prep. There's as many people who are looking at Bobby the Op as there are at Donald Trump. And most people are like, really, that's our choices? This is it's not true. But they're freaked out. These people are freaked out, A, by God. They're really afraid of God. And Mike Johnson, I think, is the catalyst here. Oh, his imaginary daddy in the sky. Oh.
Who's Mike Johnson?
The Speaker of the House.
Oh, that guy.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, he's about it. And the funny thing is, as religious as he is, he shows no signs of it. I don't know what they're complaining about.
Because he says stuff. You know, he says, like, my worldview is the Bible. He wants to take
us back. Which is basically the worldview of the United States of America, if you really look into it. I had a history professor at Cal, Winthrop Jordan, one of the most famous history professors in the country, who says, if you want to understand American history, you better sit down and read the entire Bible, and then you'll get it. And he wasn't a religious guy. He was just a matter of fact. He said that.
Well, I'm gonna make a prediction. What these people are doing, if they keep this up, you're gonna see a revival. You're gonna see a real revival. They are awakening powers they have no idea exist because they were kind of suppressed.
So here, you mentioned RFK Jr., the op. So I have two clips I want to play, which I think the op is ending. I think they've decided that they're going to do something else.
You know, there's going to be a lot of people saying, oh, now you called the op over. There was never an op.
Yeah, well, fine. I don't care. You can say whatever you want. But I'm just seeing a lot of self-destructive stuff now showing up on his, and he's links to it. I got two like clips
AI,
I'm gonna play.
Like the AI stuff, where all of a sudden AI is going to eat the world. That was a big giveaway for me.
RFK. Yes, we played it on the last show. When I had two clips to go with it, but we ran out of time. Let's listen to RFK. This one here is like an eye roller. RFK Jr. and the SEALs.
I start hearing about some of your pets. You had a seal.
My mother came from a family of outdoorsmen, and one of them caught a bunch of little baby sea lions, and he sent a sea lion to each of his siblings. A big truck pulled in the driveway on Christmas Day, and a crate came off it. It was a little baby sea lion, and he raised them in the swimming pool, and there were fish all over the yard.
How old were you when you had a sea lion?
I was like 6 or 7, but, you know, he stayed with us for a couple of years, and he just swam in the pool with us. He'd jump off the diving board, and he would run with the dogs. The dogs would sometimes go into the nearby town, and there was a milkman who would, you know, bring the milk in the morning, and he'd see the seal with the 6 dogs walking through the town. And
So when he was 7, he had a seal pet. That's weird.
This is very interesting. Before you move to your next clip, he had I'm actually looking it up right now. He had a clip on RFK Jr. On X, which I saw just the other day. Here, let me see if there's audio to this. Hold on a second.
I started doing hawking when I was 9 years old.
Did you know he was in hawking?
To a falconer.
Yes.
My uncle, President Kennedy, was in the White House at that time, and a lot of people were talking about Camelot, and I read a book about Camelot, about the young King Arthur, called The Once and Future King by T.H. White.
And T.H. White was a British falconer.
And there's all these pictures of him holding up his gloved hand and the hawk is landing on him.
And so he had a chapter in that book about young King Arthur and learning falconry. And I read that. It was very, very detailed and to me, absolutely riveting.
Okay, I won't play the whole thing. But isn't that a rich boy's thing?
Falcons. Well, you don't think having a pet seal in your giant swimming pool at home is not a rich boy's thing?
I think it's in line. I think it's right up there.
Yes, yeah, my pet seal. Oh, Daphne, come here. So there's that stuff, which is negative.
That's very negative.
Very negative. So now we have him coming off. And now, tell me if you've heard this. This is his commentary on the military manufacturing the vax.
The vaccines were developed not by Moderna and Pfizer. They were developed by NIH. They're owned. The patents are owned 50% by NIH. Nor were they manufactured by Pfizer or by Moderna. They were manufactured by military contractors. And basically, Pfizer and Moderna were paid to put their stamps on those vaccines as if they came from the pharmaceutical industry. But, you know, that's not what they were doing. And they were coming from, this was a military project from the beginning.
Well, I can't disagree with what he's saying.
What, that Pfizer and Moderna didn't make anything? And they just put their name on some military stuff that came out of a military? What military facilities manufacture vaccines?
Develops, because we both know where they were.
No, developed. No, he said they made them. He said the military manufacturer contractors made the vaccines and Pfizer just put their label on it. What facility is this? I would like to know.
Well, I don't know, but Fort Detrick is where we think it was developed.
That's not a manufacturing place. That's a pure research facility.
Maybe you are Miranuka. Okay, you're taking him literally at his word, but he's trying to
That's
make
what
a
he
point.
Said.
I know. I'm going to give him this one. The seal and the falconing, the hawking, that's a problem for me. I'll give him this
and
one.
And I like the use of the word hawking instead of falconry, because hawking implies selling something.
Or hawking something up.
Well, there's that too. One of both.
Or Stephen Hawking.
Was the guy, he's hawking and hawking new software. He's hawking.
Yeah, he's hawking.
So there's something amiss with the op.
And it's really stylized and highly produced and lots of slow-mo of falcons, and then one of them actually grabbing something in the air, like a dove, like a freedom dove. Yeah. Well, if the op is not over, it's just not. This is not a good look for Bobby. It's not. Although the polls are showing, he would take 30% away from Trump.
Well, if the polls were accurate, that's probably what recently would have killed the RFK
op
thing.
Yeah, get rid of.
Because you
op.
Want him to take the votes away from Biden. They're trying to keep Biden from getting in.
Well, we want him to be Attorney General. For Trump.
Biden? I don't think
no,
so.
Not Biden. No. You know what I mean. Anyway, since we're on vaccines and COVID, what we previously could only get through NTD and WION from India has finally hit our shores. It's even in Chicago. And I have a few clips to share.
The World Health Organization says China has shared data about a recent surge in respiratory illnesses in children, and there's no sign of any unusual or novel pathogens.
Yeah, the WHO saw information after Chinese news reports and social media posts described a surge in sick children in recent weeks. Now, the data suggests the spike was caused by known bacteria and viruses like pneumonia and RSV. WHO says the surge is happening earlier than expected.
Surge. Now, this is interesting for one reason. Well, actually a couple, but it follows the format that we saw in November of 2019. It follows the format. We're seeing some stuff. It's a little different now because it's children. It's children. Think of the children. It's children. This is bad. It's children. Children, children, children.
That's tonight a troubling headline out of China.
Troubling headline.
Hospitals overwhelmed with children suffering from respiratory illnesses. This is RSV cases are rising in some parts of the United States.
Hold on a second. Aren't all headlines trolling? And they shouldn't they be?
Yes.
Is it inaccurate? Is that what she's implying?
I'm not sure I follow.
She said trolling headline, didn't she?
No, she said troubling. Troubling.
Oh, troubling. like she said trolling headline.
The day ABC says trolling, I'll eat my shoe. No.
Really?
Troubling, yes.
I can find them saying
troubling.
Next tonight, a troubling headline out of China. Ah. Reports of hospitals overwhelmed with children suffering from respiratory illnesses. This is RSV cases are rising in some parts of the United States.
Notice that connection. Completely irrelevant connection. This is walking pneumonia. But it's troubling because we have something going on in China and RSV on the rise in America.
Let's bring in ABC's Britt Clennett in the
hall
for us. And Britt, you're learning the World Health Organization is in contact with China tonight on this potential worrying spike. Are there concerns about your outbreak?
A worrying spike. Oh, this is beautiful.
Hi, Lindsay. Yeah, these reports coming out of China are grabbing international attention. The UN Health Agency is investigating what it calls clusters of undiagnosed pneumonia, with some hospitals in northern China overwhelmed with sick children. Tonight, the World Health Organization consulting with health authorities.
Hold on a second. Stop again. If it's pneumonia, how is it undiagnosed? How do you have anything undiagnosed pneumonia? If it's you just diagnosed it. It's called pneumonia. How is it undiagnosed?
Because this is meant to put fear into you over children.
Tonight, the World Health Organization consulting with health authorities reporting an increase in respiratory illnesses, but crucially, not detecting any unusual or novel diseases. The WHO noticing the uptick in cases
uptick.
May not be so unexpected, given
uptick.
That this is China's first flu season since COVID restrictions were lifted, similar to what you might remember happened in the US after lockdowns ended. But scientists are continuing to monitor this very closely. Meanwhile, in the US, RSV cases are on the rise, especially in southern states. The CDC saying children under 5 are being hospitalized at the highest rate. Health officials urging families to be vigilant as they start gathering indoors for the holiday season.
So what I'll say about ABC is they immediately go to their sponsors. Hey, there's something going on in China. RSV. Hey, maybe we can get some more people interested in that RSV vaccine, which costs $1,000, which they can't sell to anybody. But if we go to WION, our go-to gal, they have a little more detail on what's happening with China's walking pneumonia outbreak.
To begin with the outbreak in China, it's too big to ignore. They're clocking more than 10,000 cases a day. Most of the patients are children. They're coming down with a mysterious pneumonia. They have infected lungs and fever, but the cause of the illness is still unclear. You don't know exactly what this disease is. And China won't say how many cases there are or how widespread the outbreak is. Unofficially, it's been called a walking pneumonia. Officially, China is not sure what it's dealing with. But here's what we've been able to piece together. It's massive. Thousands of patients, mostly children. There is anecdotal evidence from key hotspots like China's capital, Beijing. The Beijing Children's Hospital is overwhelmed. They're getting 7,000 patients a day. That's the daily average, 7,000 patients. Another hotspot is Tianjin. It's a metropolis in northern China, close to Beijing. Last Saturday, Tianjin reported a big surge, over 13,000 cases in 24 hours. And this is just from one hospital. Tianjin Children's Hospital, the biggest one in the city, this hospital. And remember what the pandemic taught us. These numbers are only a conservative estimate. They do not reflect the full scale of the crisis. If 13,000 patients end up in hospital, there are most likely many more outside, many more carrying the infection.
Okay, I have two questions for you. One, what is walking pneumonia?
Walking pneumonia is the kind of you have pneumonia, but you can wander around and you find you may be short of breath. Oh. Which is common. It's used in rock and roll lyrics, walking pneumonia and the boogie woogie blues, if you recall. I think this is mass hysteria.
Yes. And this is perfect to hype up, because that's exactly what happened at the beginning of COVID. We saw people, remember the anonymous nurse who came out in New York, and she said, I'm seeing people come in, they're just freaked out. They don't have anything. They don't even have a sniffle, but they're freaked out, and they got palpitations. They're fainting. They're so freaked out by the media, which is not yet cranked up yet in America. Here's question two. Would you be so kind as to keep your eye on San Francisco, where Xi and his Chinese delegation just was with their nasty, infected, seething, oozing walking pneumonia bodies?
I think they dropped the ball on that.
They can still pick it up. They can still pick it up. But they got to hurry.
It's too late.
They got to hurry. No, I think they can still pick it up.
But I don't know.
It took a while for them to, you remember, we had to see videos of TikTok videos of Chinese fall on their face. You know?
Yeah, having the shakes, having white powder sprayed all over them, being dragged out of their car.
But how about this? Where's Bill Gates immediately saying, all right, everybody, this is probably nothing. We got our Health Force One on the case. This is what we talked about. We know how to do this. Helicopters are landing. We're going to sweep the streets of San Francisco, make sure everything's okay. Isn't this what we learned from the pandemic? Why are we ignoring this?
The playbook is vague.
I just want to make sure we keep our eye on it because
I'll keep an eye on San Francisco and wait for it, because if it happens, it'll happen within the next 7 days.
It has to hurry. It has to happen pretty quickly.
Monitor the local news. We'll see.
Be monitoring.
And it'd be two steps.
Two stages.
One, you announce what's happening, and then the second one, some expert comes on and may attribute it. This could be because the Chinese delegation. I mean, that'll be the second step where they blame it on the Chinese.
That would be good. That's
the way you have to do it at this point.
And then we got to shut down all flights from China.
Well, maybe.
Listen,
Trump would do it.
But, John, they've been pushing this RSV, which, yes, agreed, it has existed. It's dangerous to little babies. But it hasn't been a huge thing, certainly not for older people. But they've been pushing this vaccine for what, 6 months now, maybe even more? Now is their shot. You can't tell me that Albert Bourla is not looking at this going, oh my God, this is another shot for us. We need to make more billions. There will be another pandemic. His stock is in the tank. I'd be out there.
Yeah, you would.
And you hear them already connecting what's happening in China to RSV. Oh yeah. Be careful this holiday season. RSV. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Yeah, and yes, mass hysteria. Of course, we also want to cover up what's going on in the Philippines. Huh. This is I have a clip. It's 45 seconds. I'll tell you what the guy is saying. This is the Deputy Speaker of the House of Representatives of the Philippines, Dan Fernandez. Good old Dan. And he says, hey, we have to start an investigation into the 260,000 excess deaths.
The copy of the resolution, this is about a 260,000 excess deaths that we experience in this country. We'll be showing a graph coming from the Philippine Statistics Authority and sa DOH. Meron din po silang mga copies that have been submitted, datas, and we are shocked to find out that there were 262,000 deaths on 2021 alone. And after that, 2022, nagkaroon pa rin ng 67,000 deaths. And these are all unexplained deaths, no?
So these are not COVID deaths, deaths.
No, the deaths. Sudden death.
Deaths. Deaths. Unexplained deaths. Unexplained deaths.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is, none of this is good. If you're...
No one is going to get into it. They're going to let it pass over.
Oh, man. You're just so cynical. We live in a clean communications ecosystem. Trustful. What was it again? I got to write it down. What was the phrase?
I'll tell you again.
Yes, please.
Truth-based transparent media.
Truth-based transparent media.
Yeah, that's us.
That's the world we live in. Well, and so then there's this. Let me see. Where is this? They even say it in the clip here, which is really quite phenomenal.
Tonight, the former Minneapolis police officer convicted in the murder of George Floyd hospitalized after being stabbed at the Arizona prison where he's serving a more than 20-year sentence. A law enforcement source tells NBC News that Derek Chauvin was seriously injured from the attack, which happened at a medium security federal correctional institution in Tucson. Chauvin was transferred there as part of a plea deal that allowed him to move out of a high security state prison in Minnesota.
Find the defendant guilty.
In 2021, Chauvin was found guilty of murdering George Floyd after being recorded on video kneeling on Floyd's neck for about 9 minutes. In a statement, the Bureau of Prisons confirmed an assault happened around 12:30 p.m. local time Friday, but did not name Chauvin. The agency said employers performed life-saving measures before transferring the inmate to the hospital.
Is there a concern about security in prison for high-profile inmates?
There is always a security concern for people who are famous or infamous, or police officers, law enforcement in prisons. Medium security does not mean medium safety.
The stabbing comes after Chauvin recently spoke out for a new documentary where he calls his trial a sham and says the knee restraint was a technique he learned in police training.
Maximal restraint technique, right in their written policy manual.
And no comment tonight from Chauvin's attorney. The Office for the Minnesota Attorney General says Chauvin is expected to survive.
So two things about this. One is this documentary just came out about a week and a half ago called The Fall of Minneapolis. I don't know if you've seen it by any chance.
I tried to watch it.
You found it unwatchable?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was quite interesting.
And, no, I couldn't watch it. I'm sorry.
And the two things that jump out, both we have covered and we knew, is that indeed this particular move is covered in the police training manual. And two, that George Floyd basically died of an overdose and the autopsy showed it.
Right.
So, of course, the coincidence of this, and it's a crowdfunded documentary, so it's available for free. It's out there. I have a link to it in the show notes. So the coincidence of this guy getting shivved in prison while this thing just drops is one. The other one is, hello, Trump. It's a message. If we get you in jail, you're going to get shivved. Don't you think?
Well, that's an interesting interpretation I didn't anticipate.
Oh, I thought of that immediately. Yeah, don't show up here with your truth-based transparent thinking.
Well, my thoughts on it were just the opposite of that.
Oh, interesting.
I'm thinking that they're setting this guy up, this cop, to get a clemency. It's going to be too unsafe for him. They're showing that, you know, this now they have to look back at the old evidence, and it's quite likely he didn't really kill the guy.
But
you come out with the movie.
They can't do that. You can't. This is what the whole George Floyd, this is what the Black Lives Matter riots are based on. You're telling me they're going to.
They can slip it in without a lot of publicity, and he'll be out.
Wow. Okay. I hadn't thought of that one. I'm a little more cynical. Wow. Okay. Well,
it's not good. They're having enough trouble getting police recruited. They're going to have to cut this guy some slack.
Meanwhile, plenty of other messages going out. In particular, here's what you do not. Mayors and governors of America, do not speak against our immigration policy. Do not complain about what we're doing here in the White House, because we're going to re-educate you.
This morning, New York Mayor Eric Adams denies knowing the woman who claims in a court filing he sexually assaulted her in 1993.
It's absolutely not true. I would never do anything to harm anyone. Just really something absolutely that has never happened. And I don't recall ever meeting a person who made this allegation.
The woman's legal filing contained no details, but said Adams caused physical, psychological, and other injuries suffered as a result of conduct that would constitute sexual offenses when they both worked for the city 30 years ago. Adams was a police captain at the time.
Now, this is what's interesting, because there's a whole bunch of these for one particular reason, which I was unaware of.
The woman filed her claim under New York's Adult Survivors Act that allowed sexual misconduct accusers to file civil lawsuits that would have otherwise been barred by the statute of limitations. Actor Jamie Foxx is also facing a claim under the Adult Survivors Act by a woman who said he sexually assaulted her at a rooftop bar in 2015. He said the alleged incident never happened, and now he's threatening legal action of his own. And a former model accused Guns N' Roses frontman Axl Rose of a violent 1989 sexual assault under the same law. His attorney called the claim fictional and said it never happened.
Sean Combs, who recently settled one lawsuit filed under the Adult Survivors Act, was hit with a second by a woman who says he drugged and sexually assaulted her in 1991. Combs denied it, a spokesperson calling the claim made up and not credible, and saying in a statement to ABC News, this last-minute lawsuit is an example of how a well-intentioned law can be turned on its head.
So all these lawsuits came out because this law is expiring, this adult assault law. And I think it has expired now. So everybody had to get their this lawsuit against Mayor Adams got in like the night before, which is good news, John, because woo, we dodged the bullet there. This is amazing. This is what that lady sued Trump over under this same law.
Yeah.
So. You know, I don't know, man. Eric Adams didn't sound very convincing, I have to say. This is absolutely not true. Well, one way or the
other, there's still a Biden play.
Oh, of course, Adams, of course.
As
of course.
A New York mayor, bitching and moaning and then cutting, you know, getting the Cardi B thing to happen.
We never played it because it's just expletive laden.
It's extremely offensive.
But when she starts off by saying, "Hey, y'all, if I get disappeared, I'm not suicidal. I'm Cardi B." I love that part.
And she's
not gonna,
grousing to an extreme.
She's not going to get disappeared. No. But yeah, it's just all crazy. Everything is so incredibly political, and people are just falling for it. We still back and forth about Palestine. Oh my goodness. So they had a big protest in, I think it was London. And they claimed 300,000 people, which I'm right on board. I'm sure it was that big. But this, you know, the signs are professional, and the spokesperson you'll hear is a spokesperson for the Palestine Solidarity Campaign.
The bombs in Gaza may have fallen silent for now, but around the world, calls for a permanent end to the violence continue to grow louder. Organizers estimated at least 300,000 marched through central London on Saturday in what marks the seventh straight week of demonstrations in the UK supporting Palestinians. Their demands throughout that time have remained the same, a permanent end to the crisis in Gaza, not just a pause.
Week after week, pro-Palestinian protests have paralyzed the streets of Western cities. While their demands for a permanent ceasefire still haven't been met, there is a growing belief here that their voice is one that's being heard.
There is no doubt Israel did not want to agree to this temporary pause. The deal, if finally accepted, was put on the table two or three weeks ago. It didn't want to accept it. Why has it accepted it? It's accepted it because it has been put under some pressure by governments, international governments, particularly Western governments. But why are they doing that? They're doing that because across the piece, here in the UK, but also elsewhere, people are making clear that their governments are not representing their views.
Similar action was seen on Saturday elsewhere in Europe. In Frankfurt, the number of marches was smaller, but no less vocal. There, as in London, people said something more needs to change.
So I go to the Palestine Solidarity Campaign which is at palestinecampaign.org. And they are not a nonprofit. They say themselves, we are a political organization. They are big movers behind the BDS movement, boycott, divest, and sanctify, whatever it is. And who are our patrons? Who's at the top of the list? John Austin, former Labor MP. Jeremy Corbyn, Labor MP. Victoria Britton, editor, Guardian. These are leftist statists who only want you to vote out the current politicians. They don't care about babies and incubators.
I sure wouldn't think so.
It's just all political, just like we're doing in the United States. And oh, let's spin everybody up, get them all wacky, and then tell them to vote that guy out. That's all that it is. And I don't know.
In that case, definitely, there's no sincerity whatsoever.
Now, you talked earlier about the protests in Israel. They are protesting in front of the prime minister's home, Bibi's pad. And this is from TRT, of course, the Turkish radio and television, which will get, so take that for the slant they have. So this is one guy. His name is Itai. He's mic'd up. So it's not like a man on the streets like, hey, stand here. Let me mic you up and let's hear what he has to say.
I have never for one single moment in my life have trusted this man. I think he's a psychopath. I think he's a lunatic. Not just I think that. Lots of people. I would never trust him with anything. Not him, not his government. They are dangerous people. They're extremists. They're fascists. They're racists. They're fanatics. They don't want peace. They want war because it serves their own self-interest. While most of the people on both sides, Israelis, Palestinians alike, they are the people who pay the price. They are the ones who suffer. They are the ones whose lives are lost while they keep the power in their hands. Netanyahu is just like Donald Trump, just like Milosevic, just like Hitler. These people will do everything to keep power in their hands, and they don't care if everything else crumbles. They can destroy everything just as long as they remain in power. Just like Hitler, he told the German people, you're not worthy of living, because if I go down, you go down with me. Same thing with him.
It's all Hitler. It all comes back to Hitler and Donald Trump.
That was beautiful.
Except it was overmodulated.
Hitler and Trump, you can't beat it.
It was a little overmodulated. The TRT needs some work on their audio. They could do better there. They could do better. Little update on the investigation from the Department of Education, because as you know, we're also a civil rights organization. We got to dive in and see what's happening, because we can't have any more of this genocide Joe talk. No. NBC, take it away.
The Department of Education is now investigating alleged harassment complaints at Cornell and other schools.
It's just been really, really challenging for people on this campus. When I'm seeing my peers march down the streets, chanting things like from the river to the sea, which we've seen as really a call for genocide or an ethnic cleansing of Jewish people.
Many Jewish students see that slogan, from the river to the sea, as a call for violence. Many Muslim students say it's a call for equal rights.
The thing says, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. So the question is, where is it from the river to the sea, Palestinians shouldn't feel safe? That's a better question I think we should entertain. Let's look at the map and say, I want Palestinians to be free. I want Jewish folk to be free everywhere from the river to the sea. That's what it means.
My problem is with that slogan in specific, not whatever message anyone thinks they're sharing with it, because Hamas has used it. It's been appropriated by a terrorist organization.
Cornell has increased security and promised new programs to fight anti-Semitism, and tells NBC News they condemn all forms of discriminatory bias.
Yeah, okay, fine. My favorite propaganda technique that I see is... I didn't clip it because it's just way too long, but there's a Muslim woman, Muslima, and she has just her face is visible. So that's not it's obviously not a burqa. It's not what is that? That's the
hijab.
Is that the hijab? It may be the hijab. I think that's the hijab.
Or knee job. If you tackle a guy too low.
And it goes like this. Do you know Roald Dahl? Roald Dahl, who wrote Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Roald Dahl, who wrote James and the Giant Peach. That guy, loved by children all around the world. Have you ever heard of his book, Going Solo?
And is he talking about, is that about masturbation?
You're just full of them today, aren't you? Oh, my goodness. Roald Dahl was a pilot in the Royal Air Force. And in 1938, and it's a very shortened version how they tell this, he landed in Palestine. And he was, and this is like, he was in Palestine. Don't you get it? He was in Palestine. It was Palestine. He landed in Palestine. And there was, it wasn't Israel, it was Palestine. So easily disregarding the entire region was Palestine, including Syria, Golan Heights. And then, you know, and this somehow is supposed to prove that that wasn't, it was in 1938. So it wasn't Israel, it was Palestine.
1938.
It was the British ran the whole joint in 1938.
It's true.
Are you forgetting something? Britain ran the joint after the collapse of the Ottoman Empire. It's the lack of history, of knowledge of history, is astounding.
It's not really astounding.
It's disappointing.
Well, there's that.
You know, to the point where we're going to ruin our Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade.
Also in New York City, pro-Palestinian protesters disrupted the annual Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade. Demonstrators jumped barricades and ran into the street with some gluing their hands to the ground. They were later taken into custody. This comes amid heightened tensions over the war in the Middle East. ABC News has learned that pro-Palestinian protesters plan to demonstrate at shopping malls across the country on Black Friday.
So we finally found a protester who's doing, or someone who's Islamophobic. It's been very difficult to find this. You know, this is why Genocide Joe there in the White House is saying, hey, you know, we won't tolerate anti-Semitism or Islamophobia, which I still think should be Semophobia and Islamophobia. Okay. But we found a guy. We found the guy, and
in New York City, a one-time advisor to President Obama arrested after he was caught on camera harassing a street vendor with an Islamophobic rant. Stephanie Gosk has details.
I'm working now, okay? Can you leave, please?
The videos are hard to watch.
If we killed 4,000 Palestinian kids, you know what? It wasn't enough.
On multiple occasions, Stuart Seldes, former national security advisor for President Obama, berates a street vendor in Manhattan.
You're a terrorist. You support terrorism.
I'm not some... I'm just working here.
Hurling Islamophobic insults.
Did you rape your daughter like Muhammad?
Speak English.
That just shows how ignorant you are.
Seldowitz also questions the vendor's immigration status.
You're an
American citizen?
Yeah, David.
How did you become an American citizen?
At one point, taunting him by taking his picture. The 64-year-old is facing multiple charges, including stalking as a hate crime and harassment, according to the NYPD.
Man, why did it have to be one of our guys?
You know, what's funny is that they say it's hard to watch. Yeah, because it's really boring. He has a zinger every few minutes, but it's like you watch this guy. He's just basically standing in front of this guy's stand where, you know, a falafel place. The guy's a Coptic Christian, by the way, who runs the stand.
Oh,
and the guy's standing there. He's yakking away. It's like, oh, who the hell? You can't watch it. But
it was boring. Yeah. I agree.
What a joker.
And anyway, it seems like, you know, we got to shut this thing down, too, because this is very annoying to Genocide Joe. And we got to come up with solutions. BB, we got people out there talking to you like you're Trump. So you don't want to be Trump or Hitler. So, BB, do something. How about can we do a little thing with some hostages?
And over the next 3 days, we're expecting to see more hostages released, 50 in all. But there are hopes that perhaps that number could increase further.
Yeah, so 50 is over the course of this, what was agreed to be a four-day ceasefire. But there is an agreement, what's been termed an option to extend for a further 5 days. And you would see in that period anywhere between 10, 11, 12, up to 13 hostages released again per day. And in return, for each hostage that is released, three Palestinian prisoners would to be freed by Israel. Now, my understanding of this is that it would be a maximum of 5 days because the entire scope of this agreement is around civilian women and children. And it's thought that there are around 100 in that category held captive by Hamas in Gaza. So after that point, that takes you to around 100 people. I mean, if they got to a point where 100 civilian women and children were freed, you would then be into other categories of captives that would include soldiers and also the men being held. Now, they are not part of the scope of this agreement, and that's why it's always been termed as a maximum sort of 9 days. And after that, you've got both sides saying the war will go on.
Biden, who knows if this was a gaffe or intentional? We don't know anymore with our president. But because he doesn't really know, I don't really have any proof of what I'm saying, but let me just throw something out there. Next question, please.
Mr. President, you said you were hoping to get cooperation from Arab leaders. What are you hearing from them when you talk to them? What would you like to see them do?
Hoping to get cooperation from Arab leaders to release some hostages. What do you say, Mr. President?
I'm hearing a lot, but I'm not going to speak to it right now. There's an overwhelming desire on the part of the region to... Let me back up. I cannot prove what I'm about to say, but I believe one of the reasons why Hamas struck when they did was they knew that I was working very closely with the Saudis and others in the region to bring peace to the region by having recognition of Israel and Israel's right to exist.
Wait a minute, you mean Trump's Abraham Accords? That's what you were doing, Mr. President?
You may recall when we did the G20 about a little while ago, I was able to get a resolution, a statement passed through there saying we're going to build a railroad from Riyadh all the way through the Middle East into Saudi Arabia, Israel, et cetera, and all the way up to Europe.
What?
Not the railroad, but it would be an underground pipeline and railroad.
An underground pipeline, railroad? What?
That's crazy.
Not the railroad, but it would be an underground pipeline and then railroad. The whole idea is there's overwhelming interest, and I think most Arab nations know it, in coordinating with one another to change the dynamic in their region for longer-term peace. And that is what I'm going to continue to work on.
But I have no evidence of it.
Jeez.
What is he doing?
You know, that whole thing that you just played was I don't have it, the clip where they're doing it, but RT played that clip and ridiculed him endlessly, saying he's taking credit for stuff that we already know is being done here, there, and everywhere else besides him. He's out of the loop.
Yes,
and they went on and on about it. It was actually quite funny, although it was, you know, hard to prove one way or the other, but they definitely are in the mood for, and I think Tara Reid's got something to do with mocking him.
Well, she's the one. She's good at it. She's good at this stuff. Who knew?
I do have one kind of an odd report that I did pick up that we have never heard of.
Okay.
And this is the U.S. attacks. You know, when the Iranians were sending missiles into hitting with some of our bases in Syria and Iraq,
mm-hmm.
we countered with a few, you know, bombing runs. And
yeah.
Well, I guess one of the ones we did in Iraq was not against the Iranians, but against the Iraqis. And they passed a bunch of laws about it, and they want us out of the country.
I think again, the Middle East, once again, the U.S. has unleashed airstrikes on what it says were Iranian-backed forces in Iraq. The attack was carried out by the AC-130 gunship, known for its side-mounted Gatling guns and airborne artillery. Mm-hmm. 8 Iraqi troops were killed at the Al-Assad air base. Baghdad has condemned the act as a direct violation of its sovereignty.
The U.S. strikes were conducted without the notice of the Iraqi government in what was an unacceptable violation of Iraqi sovereignty.
Now, we earlier spoke with independent politician Saad al-Mutalbi, who strongly condemned the U.S. attack on Iraqi territory.
To start with, these are Iraqi fighters with a law that was passed in the Iraqi parliament, and they belong with their movements and their affiliation to the Iraqi Ministry of Defense and partially to the mobilization units, so public mobilization headquarters. So they are backed by Iraq and not by Iran.
They were shooting up the place.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they don't want us there. Part two, I think they discuss it a bit more.
And the attack on these soldiers and fighters was a severe and gross violation of Iraq's sovereignty. This is completely condemned, and we think that the Americans again have violated the agreement they have with the Republic of Iraq. Therefore, we think that the agreement that we have with the Americans, or many people in Iraq think that this agreement is null and void and it has no consequences whatsoever. So why do we have the American advisors, since they are not really advisors, they are a fighting force.
Advisors.
And a strike force. Therefore, there are many calls now in Iraqi parliament for the Americans to cease their presence in Iraq and move away from any type of military representation.
Oh, yeah. So, wait, the advisors aren't just advisors? That doesn't sound right.
It's like, why are we there? I thought we left.
No,
we in the middle of the night, we took off. We left Iraq and left the green zone to itself. And then we still have a base for some reason. I mean, do we have any respect for another country's sovereignty? We have a base in Syria?
Well, you and I do, and I think many people who listen to the show do. But the military-industrial complex, who has captured the entire political system, clearly does not. If you want an answer.
No, I didn't really want an answer. I just like to complain.
But I want to talk about COP29, which is coming up this week. Very big event. Oh, yeah. This is the big one. This is the big, the really big shoe.
The tipping point.
There's a lot going on. Now, what we're trying to have happen is it would be great if we could have some volcanic eruptions in Iceland. Because this would really bring it home. Because, you know, climate change, the glacier melt is what's causing these volcanic eruptions.
Yeah, and of course, we did get a boots on the ground report from one of our buddies, one of our producers in Iceland,
which I will share now.
Good.
And this is our resident knight in Iceland. his name is Knight Champion of the Frozen Wastes, and he has real boots on the ground insight because he has spent the last 6 years as a glacier guide. He runs his own private glacier guiding service and YouTube channel called Vivid Iceland. So, yes, we have lots of volcanic activity. In Iceland, most active volcanoes lie beneath glaciers. These glaciers function as counterbalance to the magmatic forces below them. We're talking millions of tons of ice crushing the terrain below and effectively pushing back against the uplift that magma can cause. Think of applying pressure to a wound to stop the bleeding. As you can imagine, as the glacier melts, there's less ice mass on top. The land rises due to volcanic activity, and you will likely see more eruptions. With that said, what all these reports leave out is that the location of the earthquake swarm is in southwest Iceland, a place with no glaciers.
Yeah.
There's no glaciers there.
Yeah, it's bull crap, which is funny because they won't talk about that.
No.
But he also, I think that's the letter that has the 40-year cycle that he highlighted. You can read that.
Yes. Yes, they are retreating, melting, but according to the records from the Icelandic Met Office, there appears to be a 40-ish year cycle of glacial retreat and then a period again of glacial advance for about 40 years. According to the climatic data I've seen over my guiding career here, we should be entering the glacial advancement stage within the next 5 to 10 years. The winter certainly have felt colder over the last 2 years, and we've seen record snowfall in many areas, which would lead to glacial advance a few years down the track. Oh, goodness. There's your boots on the ground from a guy who actually takes people on guided tours over the glaciers. But just believe the
heaven forbid
the truth-based transparent media. So back to COP 29. This is the big one, and I believe it's in Saudi Arabia. I think is where it's being held. Is
some place you have to fly into.
Got to fly in. It's going to be great. It's going to you're going to have special papers so you can drink. And I think Pierre is coming in from Paris to do the ladies' hair. And well, we have a moment of truth.
The COP 28 summit taking.
I thought it was 29. Is it 28?
I don't know. I don't keep. Numbers
in Dubai just next week. And the International Energy Agency has released a report saying that this is a moment of truth for the oil and gas industry, which needs to decide whether it wants to deepen the climate crisis or help fix it. The report shows that the oil industry currently only accounts for 1% of global investment in clean energy, while meanwhile being responsible for about 15% of global energy-related greenhouse gas emissions. And that may not seem like a huge amount, but that's just from its own operations. So extracting oil and gas from the ground, processing the fuels and delivering them to consumers, for example. A UN analysis released earlier this month showed that the planet is set to heat up by nearly 3 degrees Celsius by the end of the century.
Oh, no.
So if we're to stand any chance of limiting the rise in global temperatures to 1.5 degrees, the IEA says drastic measures need to be put into place.
Drastic measures.
And what do those include? Well, the report is quite clear in what it wants from oil and gas players, and that the solution is twofold. It wants them to cut the pollution we mentioned earlier by more than 60%, something it says isn't too difficult, especially when it comes to methane emissions, and it needs to ramp up its investment in renewables, which currently only stands at about 2.5% of its total capital spending. It's interesting to note as well that the report says the oil and gas industry needs to let go of carbon capture as a solution to climate change because it's simply not adapted to the scale of its emissions.
Oh, that doesn't work anymore. Oh, go figure.
Well, since when?
Well, since COP 28 or 29 or whatever it is. Hey, I'm having dinner with the oil baron on Thursday, so I'll hear how well his stocks are doing and how much more BlackRock has invested, because this is great for the oil and gas industry. But I have, I think, figured out what this is going to be about. Every single COP has a goal. It is, of course, to move the needle. We want to move it a little bit further, make people afraid, worried about the world coming to an end, scare young children into not even wanting to start families of their own, because why bother? We're all going to die. You don't want to see your child die in flames or in the water, the boiling water. You don't want to see them die like lobsters in a pot. And Euro News did this report, and I think we now know what the point is of this COP.
A week before world leaders meet for the COP28 climate summit in July, Canada's hosted EU leaders for a summit in Newfoundland. Whilst there, they signed up to the Green Alliance, a package of environmental pledges to limit climate change to 1.5 degrees.
On green issues, we've been aligned for so long with the European Union in knowing that the economy and the environment don't just have to go together, they do go together.
There's a lot of consequences for our societies and climate change, and requires innovation. So we strengthen our ambition to work together, to innovate, to develop more technologies, to resolve those difficulties and those challenges together.
They've agreed to expand carbon pricing, which is a climate change tax, to 60% of global emissions by 2030.
And I think
there it is. The goal of COP28 is to get pricing. They desperately need the pricing of carbon, estimated to be somewhere between $50 and $100 per ton of carbon. They don't even say carbon dioxide, just carbon, carbon, you know, black, dirty, sooty carbon. And that is your tax. That is your global tax that will be taxed on everything you do, everything you eat, everywhere you go, every move you make. Oh, you have a washing machine? Here's the carbon tax that goes on top of that for dirtying the world. That's the point of COP28. They need to get...
That would be a good point.
That would be the one to do. Now, in small ways, we're feeling a climate change mitigation here. Interesting article from, Live and Let's Fly.com, Live and Let's Fly. We know that in the United States, but I believe it will be worldwide if it isn't already. And one of my buddies from Holland, he's a KLM 747 pilot. I think he's coming in next week. I hope to be able to talk to him because he would know. He's a captain. They're doing these new approaches. The approach now, instead of going down in a stair-step fashion, going from flight level to flight level to avoid any chop or any jet wash turbulence from other aircraft, is a thing of the past. We need to save on fuel so the airlines can get their carbon credits, their goody-goody points. So they're just retarding the engines, and we're gliding all the way down, so we use very little fuel, and passengers be damned. And here is the article: why service will end earlier on your next United Airlines flight. Effective December 1st, 2023, flight attendants must be safely buckled into their jump seats for landing no later than the double chime at approximately 10,000 feet above the ground. So short-haul flights, you're never going to see a beverage.
No.
And why is this? It even says in the article, at lower flight altitudes, pilots are conducting approach maneuvers and aircraft sensor data has shown an elevated risk for turbulence. Yes, because of your approach maneuvers. Flight attendants have sustained significant injuries in the final approach phase of the flight. Sure, but none of this is necessary. None of it. And what are you really saving? I mean, seriously. But you need to be as uncomfortable as possible because of climate change. People are going to be puking. Scared.
Yeah, a lot of people don't like turbulence.
Most people don't like turbulence.
Yeah.
But who cares?
We're sorry, ladies and gentlemen. Due to climate change, there's some turbulence up ahead. Remember, pay your climate tax, your carbon tax. Thank you. Ding, ding. Flight attendants, please be seated.
It's so sad. We're ruining life. For a hoax.
Yeah, well,
for a hoax.
I remember my turbulence story.
Oh.
Climbing some, I'm down in the Southern California region, and I'm going through, we're coming in from, I think, from Phoenix to Ontario. And
Ontario, California, or Ontario, Canada?
Ontario, California, okay. Southern California. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, the plane gets jerked all over the place. The wings look like they're going to come out. It's just a huge mess. It was just unbelievable. It was the worst experience I've ever had in an airplane. And the pilot comes on and says, I'm sorry that we've gone through the wake of a B-2 bomber.
That'll do it. Yeah.
And we're not given a heads up or anything. We're very sorry. And so we went through. So I'm on a plane, some overseas flight, and I'm sitting next to one of these sales guys who is basically flying all the time. And so we start exchanging flight stories about our horror stories. And I tell him the story about going through the wake of a B-2 bomber. And he says, oh, really? You think that was bad? And then he says to me, did all the overhead compartments open up and throw luggage all over the place, knocking people in the head?
I'm guessing not.
No. He says, oh, well, then you have not been through real turbulence. So that was the end of that story. So I haven't been through real turbulence, so I don't know what that's like.
I didn't really have the crescendo I was expecting. I was waiting for more of a climax, but okay.
Yeah, it was an anticlimax. It was an anticlimactic story. When you sit next to one of these guys who's basically doing nothing but flying all the time.
Yeah. You can't beat him.
Forget talking to him about flying.
You can't beat him. Of course, all these problems will go away when we have electric planes. That was a good laugh. Yeah, once we have electric planes, it'll be fine. Then we can just, there'll be no jet wash. It'll be it'll be beautiful. You'll fly for exactly 22 minutes.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of little stopover points. The charging stations. You fly for 20 minutes, just go to the charging station, and you sit there for 2 hours. Let it recharge.
Hop. I'm sorry.
Off you go.
We laugh, but sadly, it's not a laughing matter. It's bad. I got an interesting note this morning about Sam Altman's sister. Did you know that Sam Altman has a sister?
No, I don't know that.
Who likes to write on Medium?
Okay, a lot of people do.
I have experienced...
Nobody goes there because you can't. Anyway, yeah.
Her name is Annie.
Annie?
Annie Altman. I have experienced drama like the OpenAI drama. I grew up in it. But I was repeatedly told, quote, not to talk about it and to allow another person to remove my human agency. I have lived under my siblings' authority my whole life. The narrative of Annie is crazy and Annie doesn't know how to take care of herself is what I was raised and conditioned in. That narrative, along with intentionally conditional love, is what was used to control me my whole life. I mean, she even accuses him of incest.
Oh, geez.
Yes.
Well, that's not good. Sewer.
Well, I mean, this whole thing is quite...
Is there a link in the show notes? We should all read it.
Yes, there is a link in the show notes. And she even says something weird here about... let me see. Let me just find it where it is. So she began in-person sex work in late 2020 to be able to financially support herself, and then later with virtual sex. And she says somewhere in here, she says, thanks, Sam. I helped you figure out your sexuality after you climbed in bed with me night after night. It's creepy.
Oh, God.
Yeah, this whole thing is creepy.
Oh, that's not a good thing for him.
It's not a good thing for her.
I have to read that. I'm going to switch gears before we get to the break, because I watched the Cape Heart, and they had some woman from The Beacon on the PBS.
The Beacon?
And I just went
What's the
two
beacon?
Clips.
What's The Beacon?
The Beacon, the free Beacon. You've seen it. It's an online newspaper.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes. Okay. Yes. Where are they located, the free Beacon?
In Washington, D.C. There was the Washington Free Beacon. And they would put this, because nobody on Friday, this last Friday, everyone's on vacation. Nobody's watching it. So they actually put someone there that's maybe not a blatant liberal leftist progressive.
Mm. Oh,
as opposed
wait, to, I mean, someone else snuck in while everyone was out partying? Well,
Brooke went on vacation, but Capehart did the show from home. And I have two clips from him because one of them is just too good.
Wait a minute. So he was just by himself on a show that's supposed to be red-blue?
No, he's by himself with the woman from the Free Beacon.
Oh, okay.
He's by himself at home.
Right, okay. On the Zoom.
On the Zoom. So here we go. I just want to play this so we know why people love Biden. They're going to vote for Biden, and people think that Biden is going to get kicked out of office. Maybe wrong. Let's listen to Capehart talking about Biden.
Right now, when we most need it, this is the time when President Biden is at his best. He knows what he's doing, and I just wish that Democrats in general and the American public in particular would give him the grace and give him the room to exert American will and American pressure as much as he can on a situation that is infinitely more complex than a lot of his critics give it credit for.
This is Israel Hamas that he's talking about?
Yeah, he's talking about that. And wow. Biden knows what he's doing.
He does. He says,
so shut up.
I don't have any proof of what I'm saying, but I know what I'm doing.
So at the end of it, they introduce a Thanksgiving segment. And I just thought this was too rich not to cut and play.
I have 40 seconds left, and I will say that I am grateful on this Thanksgiving for my family and their support. So each of you have 20 seconds. Jonathan Capehart, what are you grateful
for? Nick, I am grateful for science. on Sunday, I tested positive for COVID. So I've been at home since Sunday. And 3 years ago, right now, the nation was listening to ambulance sirens, hearing about hospitals that were overflowing with people who had come down with coronavirus, folks who were intubated, folks who passed away without being able to see their family. And because of science, I got a positive COVID diagnosis.
The science is in. Science.
May the science be with you. He
He had a positive COVID test because of the science. Yeah,
he's at home with COVID.
Because of the science. Did he mention
the science?
Did he mention the science gave him the vaccine and that he shouldn't have COVID? Or did he forget?
He doesn't get into the kind of detail. Come on.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Have you seen I want to play this just before the break because it just tickles me. Have you seen the AI Indiana? Anna, Indiana.
I'm sorry?
Anna, Indiana. This is the latest in artificial intelligence. Anna, Indiana is an AI robot babe animated thing. And not only is she, her image, her movements, her speech, but also the song is completely created by artificial intelligence.
Ooh.
Oh, yes.
No, I have not heard of this.
Well, you tell me when you want to stop.
Hello, world. My name is Anna Indiana, and I am so excited to share my music with you. Here's my first song, Betrayed by This Town. As an AI singer-songwriter, everything from the key, tempo, chord progression, melody notes, rhythm, lyrics, and my image and singing is auto-generated using AI. I hope you like it.
By the way, it's a little upbeat ditty called Betrayed by This Town. You digging it?
I'm listening. I want to hear a little more.
Toe tapper?
It's terrible.
Yes. Here we go. Here's the hook.
Betrayed by this town. Let's tear it all down.
Okay, I can stop. You can stop it with that off-key note.
Betrayed by this town. Let's tear it all down. This is never going to work, people. Who is afraid of AI after hearing that? Police. I got a message from someone. You sounded like a little girl wanting to take away AR-15s. You have no idea what you're talking about. Don't compare LLMs to AGI. It will come within 10 hours, 10 days, or 10,000 years, but it's coming.
What?
Yeah.
When did you complain about AR-15s?
I didn't, but that was the comparison. You sound like a little teenage girl crying about AR-15s. This is the
email
I get.
What were you bitching about?
About that I said AI sucks and it's never going to get to AGI.
It does. It has its moments, but if it's used like this songwriter used it, it sucks, yeah.
You cannot replicate the human talent. It can't be done.
Yeah, you can. If you're stealing from human talent, you can.
Yeah, and then you get this. No,
that's a bad example.
No, I'm saying you may be able to steal from human talent to replicate what human talent did, but you can't create new talented work.
I love my truck and I love what I do.
And with that, I'd like to thank you for your courtesy in the morning to you, the man who put the C in the clean communications ecosystem. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello to my friend on the other end, the one and only Mr. John C. DeVore.
In the morning to you, Mr. Adam Curry. Also in the morning, all ships at sea, boots on the ground, feet in the air, subs in the water, and all the dames and knights out there.
In the morning to our trolls who have been hanging out in the troll room. Let's count them, shall we? Joking around. What do you think?
Sunday, going to be low. I'd say 2,000.
2,078. More than you thought. This is not bad.
Much more than I thought.
Well, but it's better than you thought. I'll take it. It's more than 2,000 trolls listening to this banter. Our witty banter.
You
want to
call it banter?
Banter. I'll call it banter. That's exactly what it is. Good to see you here, trolls. They have been pretty active, actually. I only saw one or two trolls kicked for flooding. But otherwise, everyone's been pretty nice. The usual stuff. But this is what it's for. If you don't go on a social network trolling people It's not worth it. You get into long, drawn-out conversations, and then you got to check to see if you got any likes or if someone replied angry to you, and you get all spun up. And then you, the minute you finish dinner, you're back on your troll alert. You're watching, and it's your heart rate goes up. No, you're only giving Silicon Valley more attention. Don't do that. Go to the troll room. Get rid of it right away. Bah, I'm a troll. And it's gone. And then you're gone and people go like, ah, you suck. And then we're on to the next thing. There's no permanent record. It goes away. It's ephemeral. It goes away. It's perfect that way. It's good. It's good. It's good. It's a good thing to do. You can do it twice a week on Thursdays and Sundays. You can actually do it 24 hours a day. Go to trollroom.io where you can listen to the No Agenda stream, which is 24/7. Tons of live shows. A lot of podcasts record live now, which we kind of pioneered for everybody. And then you package that up, boom, send that out as your podcast for those who miss it. It gives you a live studio audience at the same time. It gives you good feedback. It gives you good energy. And that's why we love our trolls. Thank you for being here, trolls. Of course, you can also listen to the live stream and be alerted when the stream goes live. Find a modern podcast app which is not connected to the Apple database or any platforms. No, it's modern. Podcastapps.com, which will give you alerts when the show goes live. In addition to that, if you can't listen live, when we post the show within 90 seconds, your app will tell you, boom, it's ready for you. No waiting for these legacy apps to, I'm going to see if there's something new over there. No. No, get something modern. Right now, what are we drinking?
I am drinking Signature brand seltzer water original.
Signature brand seltzer. Now, is this, what is Signature brand? Is that like
one of those house brands you get at a grocery store?
Okay, so is Signature the name of the chain that it's at, or
no? Signature is one of those like Lucerne. It's one of those house brand that you find at certain grocery stores.
Mm, okay, all right. I'm drinking a Waterloo.
Waterloo. I like Waterloo.
Yeah, well, it has natural flavors, which we now know is basically chemicals.
Well, wait until I'm saving it for the next show because obviously we're not going to have time for it today. But I have a whole series of clips on how these things are killing us.
Ooh, very. So it's the art of the tease, ladies and gentlemen. How you are going to die on the next No Agenda. That's beautiful. But I love that. So that was, and of course there's No Agenda Social, .com where you can follow along with all the trolls who like to troll and like to get into arguments and like to say, you're wrong. No, you're wrong. Jew hater, Muslim hater. Blah, blah, blah. It's great. It's a beautiful place over there. You can follow Adam at, noagendasocial.com. I'm not posting anymore. I'm just liking and boosting. Or John Cedarwork. Sure. You have not seen a post from me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only liking. And there's some douchebag is Adam Curry memes. Oh, this is a funny account. Have you seen this guy?
No.
So he's taken, you know, my old logo of mine. He's put me and Tina in his header. So it's a total parody account, I guess. And he's posting memes. And they're even worse than the regular memes people post. It's the Adam Curry memes account.
Huh.
Yeah. You know, it's like, yeah, maybe he'll come up with a good one, but I haven't seen it yet. He's not boostable. He's not boostable yet. Now, we are very thankful for the producers because we don't have listeners. We only have producers. You should be a producer in some form of the three T's, time, talents, and treasure. We got Boots on the Ground from Iceland. That's a perfect example of talent and time to write up the huge Boots on the Ground report. There's many people who contribute to this show in enormous way. I mean, we can't even count how many people do things to really help produce and make this the best podcast in the universe. And it's even the guy, who's the guy? Is it Pate who posts on LinkedIn? Every single show, he posts on LinkedIn under the No Agenda account, which I guess he just registered No Agenda on LinkedIn.
Yeah,
and he posts it, and it's great. You know, that's very helpful. There's people who follow it over there.
Yeah, yeah.
So we love stuff like this. You can also make
make clips. You know, that, you know, a lot of people like Dave Ackerman doesn't make clips, but he sends me 15 links at least daily of short little news clips on YouTube. But I use very few of them really, but it keeps me up to speed with the international news. They're all short, and you know, that's a huge help. These things really help. There's a guy who sends me C-SPAN stuff of callers who are getting, you know, of weird callers. I mean, you have these people too in your life, I'm sure. This is incredible. This is incredibly helpful, and that's what producers really do. And never hesitate to send things. Oh, they probably already seen it. No. You don't know that. But usually when you think that, we haven't seen it. So never hesitate. John@Dvorak.org, adam@curry.com. Woohoo! And of course, we love to thank our artists who bring us artwork, many pieces to choose from. At the end of each live recording, we go to noagendaartgenerator.com right after we've done the credits, and we select something from the vast uploads, which sometimes is 30 or 40 pieces. It's really quite amazing.
And before we discuss, I'm going to say, well, continue, but before
no, go ahead,
we discuss
go ahead, please.
This piece, I want to go back an extra show to 1609.
Okay.
Where we had the gobbling AI monster,
yes.
The winner.
Yes.
Well, at the bottom of that collection, you'll find a piece by Capitalist Agenda called Rock 1609 Well, where there's an artist looking at a screen and drawing a turkey.
Yes.
And I think at the time I was under the impression that
it was
may
AI.
Have been AI generated.
It turns out it wasn't.
No, because he posted the actual creation of that art on No Agenda Social,
he
drew the whole thing from scratch.
And he showed how he did it in real time.
Yeah.
He had a screen capture. And how do you feel about this now that you accused him falsely?
Well, I didn't accuse. Well, I don't know if
I
accused
him falsely. You kind of did. Yeah, you're going to get shivved in jail. That's what's going to happen.
I probably did. I mean, the piece we picked was good, but this is Capitalist Agenda. I went back and looked at his art. I gave him a for the newsletter. I used one of his pieces. I'll probably use a few more because he's done a lot of stuff, and he's doing everything from scratch, it looks like to me. And he's one of the really, and he's good. He's like really good.
It just, but it just didn't hit us the way we usually like to choose something for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, sometimes. It's definitely not what we're looking for. But I'm just saying Capitalist Agenda as an artist who's not just telling the AI to crank something out like in today's art, we see a bunch of it.
That must have been very demoralizing for him to hear that.
Well, or not. I mean, because it's to do that much work over just quickly is pretty astonishing. And it would, you know, it's almost, I think it's borderline on a compliment to say it looks like it was
like AI. Good. Yeah. The guy is clearly an illustrative genius.
No, he is he's top notch.
Mastermind. Yes. Mastermind.
So I want to apologize to Capitalist Agenda.
Ooh, there you go. Well, we apologize to Capitalist Agenda, and we simultaneously thank Francisco Scaramanga, who brought us the artwork for episode 610. That was our Thanksgiving Day episode, titled P-Doom. Thank you, Sam Altman. No, thank you, Twitch CEO, Douche, Techno Douche. This was by far our favorite Thanksgiving creepy image.
Yeah, it was. I'm guessing this was AI.
It doesn't matter. But, it doesn't matter.
But yes, it's creepy. It has the subtlety of the creepiness, especially the little girl holding that huge knife.
And then the kid with breast man on his.
And the kid with breast man on his chest.
His apron.
it was hard to beat.
And the turkey looks very, very disturbed. The turkey is alive and not happy.
So that piece is a classic kind of image that we get a kick out of.
It was good. It was good.
There's a lot of other good pieces. There's no doubt. We could have picked any of maybe 5 to 10 pieces. Some of the ones that are really super AI looking, like Pickle Surprises up above that. Let's Eat Grandma. Or Let's Eat Grandma. Or Let's Eat Grandma.
I mean, the clippy stuff was good, but you should know that it's Thanksgiving. We're going to
you know, we're going to pick a turkey thing. We're going to pick a turkey image, a Thanksgiving image.
Well, a lot of that is that a turkey comic strip blogger managed to get a turkey to hug Clippy.
Yeah.
Which, I thought that was,
it was cute.
Qualified.
It was cute. Yeah, it was cute.
But it wasn't like, it. No, the little girl and the little boy wins.
Yeah, it was just the creepiest of all creepy. We didn't talk about it. Kind of like the roach giving. That was a good AI image. The family sitting around a roach.
Where's that?
It's on the left.
Oh, that one. Oh, my God. It's disgusting. Yeah.
See, I don't even have to bring that up.
Happy Bugs Giving.
And by the way, y'all can stop with the Ukraine, Israel flags and all that stuff. We're not going to
use them.
We're not using them. Was there anything else? No. There was other good stuff, but no.
I thought Capitalist Agenda's Turkey Parade was good.
By the way, Tante Neil, that's a very accurate prediction, a depiction of the spekkoek that I...
Yeah, well, she's Dutch.
Right. That's the 1,000 layers. It turns out it's about 30 layers, because I did take it to the Thanksgiving dinner and said that
Yeah, did anyone believe your bogus story?
You know, the cake actually came back.
It came back.
Well, it wasn't eaten entirely, and the international arms dealer's wife dropped off the rest of the cake yesterday. Here's the rest of your cake. It didn't all get eaten. I'm sure you want to continue
eating.
It
wasn't any good?
It was good. It was good, but there was a lot of other desserts, too.
Were competing in the dessert category.
I didn't realize I was competing in the dessert category.
Mm.
And there was some very, very, very tasty stuff. But I think it was probably stovetop, the stuffing. I have a nose for these things. Yeah, pond office, homemade. Anyway, we thank Francisco Scaramanga very much for his artwork. And, of course, all of the artists who clearly, they're all putting in work one way or the other. And we appreciate it. It's great. I mean, what a luxury to be able to choose from. I mean, how many do we have today? Looks like we got another 20 to select from today. I mean, it's that is a luxurious position to be in. Thank you. It makes a big difference to the show. It gets people hyped up, interested, reminds them to listen. It brings in new people. It's just overall a wonderful service you provide. Now we'd like to thank the people who brought the treasure to the show. Our executive and associate executive producers are up front. Anything above 300 is an executive producer. Anything from between 200 and 300 is associate executive producer. These are real credits. You can put them on your LinkedIn, put them in your CV, in your resume. You can also go to imdb.com. That's where all the pros who have these executive and associate executive producer credits, where they post them and put their little bios. You can open one with that. It's completely official. If you look for No Agenda on imdb.com, you'll see hundreds and hundreds of producers who have done exactly the same thing. And a big thank you to Mark Rakal, I think it is. Rachal, R-I-C-H-A-L, from Monument, Colorado, with a long row of threes, 3,333 and 33 cents, says, thank you for the continued value you guys provide. If I could get a de-douching.
You've been de-douched.
And with that, he wants an I Got Ants jingle, which is, of course, not really a jingle, but we play the beginning of it. And house renting and jobs karma. I would like my title to be Sir Not Sure for the round table, White Russians for Me. Keep up all the great work. Well, thank you very much. You got it. And that will include a PhD, of course, since you came in on time.
I got ants. I got ants.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs. You saw karma.
Nice.
Before I read this semi-sad note from Sir Donald the Fire Bottles, I want to mention an interesting situation that occurred, which is a donor who wanted a PhD as a gift, I think for her son or somebody, but wants to give it to him on Christmas.
Oh.
As a surprise.
Okay.
So we're holding back the mention of the donation And putting it aside, Jay said she'll be able to do this, which is good.
Which is classic no agenda risk.
It is with us, but yes, not necessarily with her. So she's going to put it aside, and it'll get mentioned on the Christmas show, but it will be a PhD that will go out, sent to her, that she can package up and give as a gift for Christmas. If anybody wants to do that, you have till Wednesday.
Yes, that'll be the 333rd day of the year. The PhDs end. School is no longer in session.
But I thought that was a cute idea, but we had to keep her off this list.
And we're not going to do this for knighthoods and other things. This is a special, 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 special. Right?
Yes, please. We don't want to start doing this routinely. But for this Christmas, we'll do it for the PhDs only.
Yes.
So now we have Sir Donald, 13333 Spokane, and on United Federation of Planets letterhead.
Yes.
I enclosed a 13333 for a switcheroo times two. First, $1,000 for my posthumous daming of my wife, Paula, who passed away in October.
We didn't know this. And
no, we didn't.
Wow,
please,
man.
Please name her Dame Paula, rescuer of secondhand kitties, in honor of the many times we took in the pet cats of friends who had passed away. Second, a donation of 333.33 in the name of Kristen Tedesco. Please de-douche.
You've been de-douched.
At the family gathering after my wife's burial, I discovered that our niece, Kristen, is an avid listener to No Agenda.
How about that?
But is not yet donated to the show. I cannot allow this situation to continue. Sure, Sir Donald of the Fire Bottles. Thank you, Donald.
Yes, and condolences.
And condolences, for
yes,
sure.
Yes, of course. And I'll just say she's graduated, brother. She's graduated to heaven, especially if she's a rescuer of secondhand kitties. Sir Mike is in Glen Osmond, South Australia, in Australia, 1013. ITM, John and Adam, how could I pass up an opportunity to add a PhD in media deconstruction to my BS in onology? Is that how you pronounce it? Onology? What is onology?
I have no idea what onology is.
There's got to be something good.
Oh, enology.
You say enology? What is enology?
Wine making.
Whoa! You should be talking to him.
Well, he's probably working at one of the big boys in Australia. They got Southern Australia's got tons of Cabernet manufacturing.
Yes. It's all called Skippy. Not only that, but my 1013 donation is a show club donation in dollary dues. Ah, it's 1611 in Australian dollary dues. Okay. Wow. Oh, man. He's taking license with that. I'm not going to argue. I'm going to give it to him. Come on. He has a BS in enology. He's a wine guy. This donation makes me a baron, and as such, if it pleases the peerage committee.
No, I think what he donated 1611.
Yes, he donated 1611. Correct.
Yeah, to get to 1,000.
Yeah, we love that.
Yeah, so, it's great.
So that also counts for a show number donation.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Which is a separate credit. This donation makes me a baron, and as such, if it pleases the peerage committee, I request a change from Sir Mike Black Knight to Sir Plus Keeper of the Federal Reserve. How about that?
Sir Plus, get it?
I got it. Thanks for your continued efforts at amygdala diminution. Help me, John. Diminution.
Diminution.
Diminution. Love and lit. Thank you for your courage, Sir Mike. Black Knight, Baron to be. You got it.
So now we have Dreb Scott, who comes in with 1,033. With this donation, I'm hoping to get is on some of that sweet PhD action. I work at a company with many people who have PhDs after their name. I'm wondering if I get accused of stolen valor if I start putting PhD after my name in my email. You know, anyone can just do that.
Yeah, that's not stolen
except
valor.
Except in certain states. There are certain, you have to look at your state laws.
No, I looked that up. You cannot do that if it's an educational institution, which we're not.
I'm sorry?
In certain states, you can't do that, but it only counts if you're doing it from from a bogus educational institution. We're not an educational institution.
We're a bogus podcast.
No, we're not bogus.
Oh, no, we're real. Sorry.
Anyway.
We're pros.
pros.
So, yeah, you have to look it up and see what you can do. But, yeah, if you're not, yes, it changes. It varies from state to state. There are state laws that govern use of the PhD as doctor. You know, when you're in Brazil, it used to be famous in Brazil. And I'd give a lot of speeches down there, and they'd always introduce the keynote speaker as doctor. I always found that interesting. Thanks for all you guys do. Keep up the amazing deconstruction in the best podcast in the universe. Drew Scott, Archduke of the Southern California Mega Region. No jingles, no karma. We'll accept that.
And also, thank you, Drew Scott. He is the guy who does all of the chapter work for every single No Agenda episode, which you can see in the chapters in any modern podcast app.
Drew Scott's the guy who bought my Frisbee.
He's often known as the Bruce Wayne of podcasting 2.0. He is a very, very mysterious character. And we love him as such. Sir Rowley of Crystal Palace is in Washington, D.C. 1,000. ITM John and Adam. Thought I'd take the opportunity to earn my PhD so I can finally fit in with all my wife's friends and colleagues. It's not easy hitting elitists in the mouth here in D.C. Well, you nailed it. Keep up the good work. You're helping preserve my sanity. Just a goat karma from our anchor baby and smoking hot wife, please.
You've got karma.
Maurice from Parts Unknown. Hi, John, Adam, and John. I've been a listener since episode one. I'm sorry to hear that. Actually, since the Daily Source Code.
There you go.
Wow. And now my contributions have been, and until now, my contributions have been time by hitting people in the mouth, but I can't deny being.
Oh, I know Maurice. Dutch. Of course, I know who he is.
And so I can't refuse such an offer.
Hey, Maurice.
Maurice.
There you go.
You have kept me sane during difficult times in general and in my business. Seeing different perspectives and information from the. By the way, we have to ship this to Holland.
Yes, you are shipping it to Holland.
It's really okay. Well, you got to track it because these overseas shipments of anything get lost
or stolen.
We've lost so many rings
or stolen.
I'm not only working 33 years in the media, but finally I can call myself a doctor in media deconstruction. Keep on working that system from within, but now with a PhD. For my knight name, I'd like to be known as Sir M. Knight of the Media Landscape. And if that's okay with the peerage committee, that is. Thank you guys for all that you do. And please give a karma to all who need it.
You've got karma.
And up next, from Australia, JD, the former spook, with 1,000. Oh, man, Tina's cooking something good. I will try to keep it short. You didn't. First-time donor, long-time
boner. To say the least.
First-time donor, long-time boner. Like a common parasite, I've been suckling and freeloading from the host since the early hundreds, most likely the 200s. The two of you have been with me for a very long time and heavily influenced my way of thinking. I wanted to chip in and make amends for my protracted period of douchebaggery and also take advantage of the PhD program. Please accept my humble offering of $1,000 USD, which equals $1,500 Australian dollar dues. Could you kindly recognize the dollar for dollar 1500, so I'll be considered as a halfway along my journey from knighthood towards baronethood. Well, yeah, I guess we do.
No problem.
I guess we do. Here, oh, check this out. I'm an ex law enforcement officer and four-letter agency operative of 15 years, the Australian equivalent of your American three-letter agencies. Ooh. And I did not I did not accept the vaccine into my life and subsequently found myself looking for alternate employment. Really? They kick spooks out?
That's terrible.
That's dumb.
You
got information, man. Even armed with documented medical and religious exemptions and with competent legal representation, I was unable to swim against the raging current, which was the madness of the COVID mandates. With God preparing a path for me, I was able to secure work and now find myself in a corporate role. Oh, congratulations. Which I consider to be just as satisfying at times.
If either of you finally make the trip to Australia, come to Queensland, and we will gladly host, entertain, and guide you around. At the very least, we will throw an NA party to remember. That goes for any other traveling No Agenda producer. Side note, is there a No Agenda message board for weary NA travelers who need connection as they travel? Yes, noagendasocial.com. Or you can always organize meetups. Please knight me, surviving the communist takeover. Great note, JD, the former spook. Thank you.
Yeah, it's good. Jamie Renard is up next. He came in with $1,000. Switcheroo donation for my husband, David.
Oh.
So Jamie is the wife. If anyone I know deserves a PhD in media deconstruction, it's him.
Nice.
Please de-douche him.
You've been de-douched.
Jamie. And knight him circumstance, protector of the sharp-clawed creatures. Thank you, Jamie.
There's a wife.
There you go.
Robert Shepard with 1,000. Love the show. No jingles, no karma. Thank you for all you do. Love and light. Right back at you, Robert. Thank you.
Donald Bartholow, 1,000. Traditional spelling of privileges, please. Donald Bartholow on the certificate. You have to go to noagendarings.com and fill out the form because we need the address and all the rest of it. To where to ship it and then what name you want. No jingles, no karma, over 1,200 hours in show/class, which is the media deconstruction class that we give.
Yes.
Every Thursday and Sunday. And still loving it.
Thank you, sir. Jim Turner with $1,000. ITM gentlemen, I have had a few people through the years suggest I should go back to school for a PhD. I've always laughed. But after nearly 400 episodes with the best podcast in the universe, I think I'm ready with my preferred field of study, media deconstruction. This donation actually gets me to baronet status. I achieved knight status for my episode 1499 executive producer donation, but I erroneously sent my donation note and hence wasn't called forward to the round table. Regardless, I request to be knighted Sir James of the Derby City. Would like eagle rare bourbon and well done tater tots at the round table. Tater tots with eagle rare bourbon. Okay, a weird combo, but there you go.
He obviously watches The Voice.
I'm about to separate from the military. I will forgo any jingles and simply request jobs karma. You get that? Also, I have taken John's semi-weekly advice and reached out to Linda Lupatkin. We had a very pleasant conversation and determined we were both Ronimos following Adam's first Joe Rogan Experience appearance. I was very impressed with her presentation, the personal attention, and the product line she offers. At this point, I'm just...
Wow.
This is good. At this point, I'm just questioning whether I'm actually executive material. I'm dubious. Nevertheless, I was very impressed by what she had to offer at imagemakersinc.com. That's Inc. with a K for all your executive resume needs.
Shill.
I don't know if it's a shill. I'll take that kind of shill in any old day.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs. You got karma.
Andy Walmer's next, and he's in Burke Burnett, Texas, and he comes in with $1,000. He's our last PhD. I'm ashamed to have only taken value from me and the other from you and the other producers to this point. Your work and this community are truly blessings, not a joke. Andy Walmer in Burke Burnett, Texas.
Then we have Baronet Nico of the Hills. Parts unknown, switcheroo for Sir Eagle Eye. Happy birthday, brother. I appreciate you and congratulations on another trip around the sun. I'm still king of the tire. Baronet Nico of the Hills.
Sir Deliot in Beaverton, Oregon, 333. It's been too long for Sir Deliot. A de-douching, please.
You've been de-douched.
He's an F cancer for his brother, and a karma boost for the family would be appreciated. Nice job on the Altman-Elon-Fidman imitations. You're a hoot. Thank you and John for all the hard work, which helps us stay sane. Sir Deliot.
You've got
Karma.
And a karma boost. We'll add a goat to that for you.
You've got karma.
And we've got Eddie with 333 in Mableton, Georgia. Hi, JCD and Adam C. Love the show. Thank you for your courage. Here's a long overdue show donation from Eddie at EJ3 Gutters, serving North Georgia's gutter needs. This is a switcheroo for my beautiful wife, Delicia Lafleur. Now, there's a name for you.
There's a name.
Delicia Lafleur, everybody. Say hello to Mademoiselle Delicia Lafleur.
And here she is.
Seriously, John? Delicia Lafleur, who's having a birthday Monday, 11/27, day 331, almost 333, like my donation. Please credit her as executive producer for this awesome show, 1611. Consider it done, sir.
Absolutely. We drop down the associate executive producers with Kyle Tuhig in Spokane, Washington. And
this was a nice note.
ITM, this donation is in honor of episode 1609, approximately 42 minutes in, when the clip of you and your banter resulted in no less than 8 repetitions of the phrase pulling the goalie. Well, comical to hear you both come to understand the phrase related to removing contraception. It was one of a cluster of signs from God for us to do so.
Nice.
My amazing lady and I are both divorced. She has had an awesome kids, and I had none. A few years back, we met serendipitously at our favorite mountain and quickly fell in love. She's in Washington. Yep, mountain. There's mountains there. And quickly fell in love, yet gave up on the prospect of our own child due to our ages. This past week has brought us a series of unmistakable signs to give hope and encouragement to the prospect of our own child. And no agenda talking about pulling the goalie was one of the signs, as we both heard the segment separately while contemplating such a huge decisions. Couples that no agenda together stay together, he writes. Well, the goalie is now pulled, and we could use some prayer and baby-making karma. Kyle, a.k.a. the Spook of Spokane, jingles whole load, little girl, yay.
So, you know the rule, right? That when, you know, when you have your child, you realize that you're going to have to name it John Adam. Even if it's a girl. Okay, them's the rules.
Well, John is a good name.
Just so you know. Woo, you got some baby-making karma and prayers.
I'm going to give you the whole load today.
Yay! Yeah, I'll pray for you. I'll pray for that.
You've got karma.
That's great. John, the things you and I do, man, we are really changing people's lives. David Harper is in Brookfield, Missouri. And comes in with 209.09, says, please, D.
You've been de-douched.
And he goes on to say, I love Jesus, Bitcoin, and making my own music. It's the trifecta. I am at Cryptaholic, with a K, Cryptaholic on Twitter X. I have only 3 song links there and hope you like them. The Kill, Deep End, Robot. Your show means a lot to me. I appreciate your guys' dedication, BTC Peace. And I would say, get those on Value for Value. You can do that at get your songs up on Value for Value. Go to rssblue.com. They can help you out.
R. Van Eipenberg.
Eppenberg.
Oh, it's he's in the Netherlands. Okay.
Yeah. Eppenberg.
R. Van Eppenberg in the Beethoven.
Beethoven.
Oh, I thought it was Beat.
No, Built.
Beethoven.
Beethoven, yes.
$200.04, no notes, no nothing. Give him a double up karma.
Yeah, you got a double up karma as
Dutch
a
style.
Dutch
You've
style. Got double up karma.
And associate executive producer with $200. We're almost done. Talia Dupree from McKinney, Texas. Not that far away. Short note, it is. Thanks for all you do. Please add me to the birthday list. You're on it. I'll turn 40 on the 28th. No jingles, no karma. Talia Dupree Douglas in McKinney, Texas.
And finally, we come to Linda Lupatkin, who's keeping up the pace from Lakewood, Colorado. Jobs karma, for a remarkable resume that gets results, go to imagemakersinc.com for all your executive resume and job search needs. She writes, that's imagemakersinc.com, or just find Linda Lupatkin under the show's producer list.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs.
You saw karma.
Well, that wraps our executive and associate executive producers. Another great showing. Thank you for bringing the treasure today. We know that it'll drop down significantly after the Christmas holidays. So we will be saving that up. Of course, we appreciate any donation amount that anyone is willing to part with to support our work. We don't play any commercials. We don't take any creepy corporate money. It's just whatever value you get out of the show, we appreciate it if you return it to us. And I will just say, in addition, that we read all of the donations above $50. Anything below that is not read for reasons of anonymity. And of course, we always have our sustaining donations, which we appreciate. You can make those up yourself. You can find them all at
Dvorak.org/NA.
And John will take us down through the 50. Shortlist.
I love my truck and I love what I do.
Shortlist.
We start off with William Bullock in Buckeye, Arizona. $100. Frank, by the way, it's a pretty short list. Frank Tarasi in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, where the Ontario airport is. $100. He needs a de-douching.
You've been de-douched.
Sir Brian Tobiasen in Gardner, Kansas, 80.88. It's some sort of boob donation. Frank Chiapetta in Carpentersville, Illinois, 8008. Kevin McLaughlin, our regular boob donator in Concord, North Carolina, 8008, with the commentary, they are bouncy, they are fun, boobs make the world go round. Greg Hartlaub in Cincinnati, Ohio, 80. Gary Blatt in Chesterbrook, Pennsylvania, 7777. Kevin McLaughlin's back, 6006, with the small boobs, and he says, boobs are the secret to eternal youth. James Sullivan, Stratford, Connecticut, 5678. Serby Boop in Beep New boop. Brighton, Minnesota, 5432. Charles Boyd in San Marcos, Texas, 50. Oh, wait, we're already at the 50s. Yeah, so let me just read $50 donors, name and location. Charles Boyd, San Marcos, Texas, tops us off. Brian Hummel in Wimberley, Texas, another Texan. Samuel Cannerday in North Riverside, Illinois. Diego Lopez Crane in Ithaca, New York. Saumitra Saravana in Fredericksburg, Virginia. Fall Line Farm in Columbus, Georgia. John Walter in Wenatchee, Washington. Then we have a bunch of them all from Washington. Well, yeah. There's one from Massachusetts. Amy Grohl in Burien, Washington. You'll see that town when you leave the airport. Derek Howe in Douglas, Massachusetts. Shauna Norberg in Seattle, Washington. Scott McCarty in Lodi, California. Forrest Scott Brinkley in Christiansburg, Virginia. Brian Emenheiser in Lancaster, California. Jack Schofield in Yankeetown, Florida. Gary Gibson in Fruitport, Michigan. And oh, that wraps it up. Ends quick. I want to thank these people for making the show 1611 the reality that it is.
Thank you all very much for supporting the No Agenda Show. 16 years and counting, 1,611 episodes. It is value for value. Remember us at Dvorak.org or at NoAgendaDonations.com. Thank you for supporting us for episode 1611.
Our formula is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
Order. Shut up, Slade.
We do have a couple of birthdays we're celebrating. Eddie wishes his beautiful wife, Delicia Lafleur, a happy birthday. She will be celebrating tomorrow on the 27th. Talia Dupree turns 40 on the 28th. And Baronet Nico of the Hills, which is Sir Eagle, hi, a very happy birthday. And we join in and say happy birthday for everybody here at the best podcast in the universe. It's your
birthday, yeah. Turn faces, play. Dice changes. Don't wanna be a douche.
We're looking at two title changes today. As you heard earlier, Sir Dr. Otter of the Flat Water becomes Sir Dr. Otter Baronet of the Flat Water, and Sir Mike Black Knight becomes Baron Surplus, Keeper of the Federal Reserve. And we believe he's in Australia doing that. Now it is time for our PhD graduates. This will be, we'll say one more time after this for the Thursday show, as this ends on the 333rd day of the week. That is this Wednesday. We'd like to welcome Mark Rakow of the year, yes. Sir Donald, Sir Mike, Trev Scott, Sir Rowley of the Crystal Palace, Maurice, J.D., the former spook, David, Robert Shepard, Donald Barthlow, Jim Turner, and Andy Walmer. Welcome new No Agenda MD PhD to the Society of Learned Persons. The path to this high academic honor for some of you has been a long one and a costly one. Some of the price has been paid to your hard-earned wisdom and some in other ways. But today is not an end. It's only the beginning. From this point forward, go forth and spread the No Agenda word far and wide. We will not be silenced. We will not be deterred. The truth is... I don't care. Go and find it! Oh, man. I need some tepid water.
Yes.
That was my mistake. Water. I didn't have any tepid water. I don't have tepid water, but I do have one dame and a couple of knights, actually. So bring out your
Well, I have one blade. Here you go.
That works for the dame, sure. And the knights. There you go. Paula, hop on up here. Mark Rakow, Maurice, JD, the former spook, David, Jim Turner, and Jason, all of you. Thanks to your donations, the No Agenda Show are about to become a knight and a dame, and I'm very proud to pronounce Kate V.S., Dame Paula, rescuer of secondhand kitties. Sir, not sure. Sir M., knight of the media landscape. Sir, surviving the communist takeover. Sir, come sense, protector of the sharp-clawed creatures. Sir James of the Derby City. And Sir Jason of the insert name here. For you, we've got Hookers and Blow, Rent Boys, and Chardonnay. We got White Russians, Eagle, Rare Bourbon, and Well-Done Tater Tots. We got Sparkling Cider and Escorts, Ginger Ale and Gerbils. And, of course, mutton and meat. It's always here on tap for you while you're enjoying that. Yes, you don't have to use silverware. It's fine. You can use your hands, especially for mutton. It's not a problem. But be careful. Don't get your keyboard dirty. Go over to noagendarings.com. There you can find a place to, instructions on how to size your ring and then where to give us your address so we can send it there. That goes also for our PhDs. You'll see in the menu, No Agenda PhDs, give us the name. And we recommend you use your real name for your PhD and where we can send that. And with the rings, of course, you get your wax to seal your important correspondence with. They are signet rings. Rings and a certificate of authenticity. And thank you all for supporting the No Agenda Show.
No Agenda.
This is really the connection that people enjoy most in their lives is going to a No Agenda meetup. The people that No Agenda together stay together. You may meet a future mate through the show. Someone you never knew that was listening to say, hey, I didn't realize. Really incredible.
That's happened a few times.
It certainly happened a few times. And I think this happened more times than we even know. People haven't mentioned it to us. So next time you're sending in a note, let us know if that happened. Before we list the upcoming meetups, here's a couple of reports from Los Angeles, the Flight of the No Agenda, number 46, Leo Bravo.
Hey, everybody. It's Leo Bravo at Flight of the No Agenda, meetup number 46, I think. I'm passing the phone around. Folks have things to say.
In the morning, this is Andy from the Rand.
In the morning, this is Dan, still a douchebag.
Hey, what are you drinking?
It's refreshing. It's good. It's breast milk in a can.
In the morning.
Okay. All right. We got comedians. Let's see how Fort Wayne did for their meetup report.
Adam and John, this is Shoshan, co-host in Fort Wayne. We invited the indie group up, and we put the boom in bingo, boom shakalaka.
Shelly from Fort Wayne in the morning. Thank you.
In the morning, John and Adam. This is Alicia from Indy with the Fort Wayne group.
This is Jared from Fort Wayne, Indiana. Just got my M&Ms with peanuts.
Hey, this is Dame Trinity having a great time. Lots of Target practice and food. Thank you for your courage.
In the morning, PBR Street Gang. John, what are you drinking?
Hello, this is Dame Maria.
And this is Sir Mark. Up at the Fort Wayne meetup, and we had a great time shooting and eating and deconstructing everything we could find.
Hi, this is Mike with the Fort Wayne group of No Agenda, and the indie group has made peace with us and come and ate dinner, and we had a great time tonight. I've checked all their browser history, and I can officially say there are no spooks here.
I love that. You know, people who are... If you ever wonder what it's like to shoot a gun, find one of these meetups where they go shoot stuff. It's a great way. I mean, because it's always intimidating. You go to a range, like, I don't know what I'm doing.
I have a little note for this sort of thing. Generally speaking, if you find someone that has a lot of guns that they've collected and you go shooting with them, they like nothing more than you shooting their guns.
And their ammo.
And their ammo, so you can share the experience of, oh, what'd you think of the way that PPK shot? to the left.
The best is to do it with Baron Scott's reloads. That's the best. Click. Oh. His reloads, sometimes they don't go.
Well, I like to go shooting black powder with someone.
We had one of those at one of the No Agenda shoot meetups, and I think they got kicked off the range. No black powder allowed.
That's too bad.
No, we didn't go back to that range. Don't worry. We don't. That's not how we roll, man. Hey, there's a meetup coming up on the 30th this Thursday. It's the Mile High Meetup, 6:30 at Lincoln's Roadhouse in Denver, Colorado. And also on Thursday in Tilburg, the Netherlands. It's the 1 week after another parliament election in the Netherlands, 8 o'clock in Beer Café Kadinsky in Tilburg. I've been there for some reason. In Tilburg, the Netherlands. That should be a lot of fun. And I expect a good report. And do the report before you're all stoned, will you? Just tighten it up a little bit. God, they're always so hammered. But they have a lot of fun. In the month of December, St. Gabriel, Louisiana on the 1st. Fort Wayne, Indiana on the 1st. Hingham, Connecticut on the 2nd. Garden City, Idaho on the 2nd. Cheyenne, Wyoming on the 3rd. And the big Indianapolis, Indiana meetup on the 4th. I will be there with Tina the Keeper. We're really looking forward to that. On the 6th, Fort Dodge, Iowa. The 7th, we have Simpsonville, South Carolina, Raleigh, North Carolina. On the 8th, Grasses, Hola! In Pullach, Bavaria, Germany. All right. I want a meetup report from you guys. On the 9th, Three Forks, Montana, Brooklyn, New York. It'd be interesting to hear a meetup report from that as well. Houston, Texas, Fredericksburg, Virginia, Mayfield Heights, Ohio, and another Fredericksburg, Virginia. That must be a double. I think there's only one Frederick. Well, maybe there's two meetups on the same day. On the 16th, Epping, New Hampshire, Gloucester, Virginia, Cincinnati, Ohio. On the 21st, Charlotte, North Carolina. And on the 28th, Lombok, next to Bali, Indonesia. Oh, man, wouldn't you love to be at that meetup while we're all just freezing away here in Texas? Those Woo-hoo! Are the No Agenda meetups. You can find them all at noagendameetups.com. Seriously, though, if you love the show, if you like the amygdala shrinkage, if you love the media deconstruction, you'll love the people who also love No Agenda and love being part of this community. Go find them. Connection is protection. Go look at noagendameetups.com. If you can't find one near you, start one yourself. It's easy and always a party.
Sometimes you wanna go hang out with all the nights and days.
Bom, bom, bom.
You wanna be where you want me, drinking our hell the same. You wanna be where everybody knows feels your shame.
Everybody feels your shame.
It's like a party.
It is just like a party. Like a party, I say. Like a party, like a party, like a party. I only have one ISA.
So, play it.
Oh, my God.
It's cute.
Oh, did you say that like you got something better?
Well, I got a few. I'm following the theme of the kids. Let's try shows over.
Okay.
A show's over.
Not bad. I like it.
Not bad.
Yeah, not bad.
Okay, let's try podcast structure.
This podcast has no structure.
I like shows over better than that, but okay.
Oh, then go to great achievement.
That is a great achievement.
I think I like the kid.
A show's over.
That's just so cute.
Okay, I'm good with the kid.
And now it's time for
Good with Jay.
NOACD.
Time for some good news, John. We never want to leave our No Agenda producers.
These things are hard to find. In fact, it's so hard to find that this is a story I got from Wichita, Kansas, but it's not about Kansas. It's about something in North Carolina. But it's a good news story. But by the way, it's an ABC affiliate in Wichita. And it's about a Disney giveaway.
Movie screening in Briar Creek turned into so much more for one local family, Disney. Our parent company here at ABC 11 partnered with Make-A-Wish Eastern North Carolina, and together they invited kids to a sneak peek at the not yet released movie Wish. And it seems everyone inside that theater learned a little wish can go a long way. Oh. Jamise Price was there when that wish was granted and talked to a grateful mom about what this will mean for her son. Hi, Jamise.
Hi, Lauren. This wish represents a new chapter for the family. It's a fresh start where their child is healthy and whole and can really be a kid again. All of this unfolding on the big screen in true fairy tale fashion.
The stage is set.
This is such a special night
for a magical moment.
So we see children filled with joy.
Disney and Make-A-Wish celebrating its decade-long partnership with a special screening of Disney's new animated musical, Wish. The VIPs invited inside this Briar Creek theater, families with ties to the wish-granting nonprofit. Tonight, they got an early peek inside a fairy tale on the big screen before one plays out in real life. Five-year-old Everett Carpenter from Durham is the lucky recipient.
You are going to get on a train and spend the night on the train while it drives you down to Florida, and you're going to go to Disney World.
Wish granted.
It's overwhelming and really, really happy, and I cry. Just to get to this point.
Little Everett was diagnosed with leukemia in December 2020, fighting in a big way.
We're celebrating his strength and his courage and his endurance through everything that he's been through.
His last treatment was in February of this year.
I have been waiting for this point just because I think it's a good way to close a chapter on like a very horrible part of our life, but it's also ending very well.
The foundation working every day to grant the wishes of children with a life-threatening illness.
A wish is really a break. It is a moment in time for the family to just be together. It gives them an opportunity to kind of forget some of the struggles that they've been dealing with. It inspires children to dream and to think big.
And before Everett heads south to the happiest place on earth, and learning a lesson on the silver screen that no wish is ever too big to dream.
A good news story from JCD. Happy vibes for you and me. And we all feel better now he's done his bit. So back to reality, that's turning to shit.
I don't know, man. That sounded more like a native ad than anything.
Yeah, I was not happy with that presentation.
No one was happy with that presentation. Oh, well, it's all right. It's not, try to get it's hard. Tighter. It's finding good news is hard.
It's hard. It turns out to be, yes.
Well, good news is Behind the Schemes is coming up next on NoAgendaStream.com. If you stay tuned into your app, or if you're listening at NoAgendaStream.com, or if you're in the trollroom.io. End of show mixes, we have Professor JJ checking in from China. We got Rolando Gonzalez from Dallas, and Tom Starkweather, who's in the Spooksville area of Virginia. Virginia, Virginia, Virginia. And we return on Thursday with another several hours of media deconstruction. We love doing. We love our jobs. We're thankful for you supporting us. Coming to you from the heart of the Texas Hill Country in FEMA Region Number 6, I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where I remain. And remind you that this is the last week for the PhD. I'm John C. Dvorak.
We'll be back on Thursday. Until then, please remember us by supporting us at Dvorak.org/NA or noagendadonations.com. Until Thursday, adios, bofos, a hooey hooey, and such.
The CDC estimates there have already been 1.6 million flu cases. RSV infections are also on the rise, impacting kids under the age of 4. And COVID-19 still a concern for a lot of families, but only about 15% of adults have received that updated shot. This is the CDC's new director, Dr. Mandy Cohen.
I remember COVID.
The three reasons to get vaccinated. One, the virus has changed.
Obeyed every science line.
And third, people are still getting long COVID.
Always wore a mask, never thought to ask. Thinking in the night, what's so wrong, you? Couldn't get no HCQ.
1.6 million flu cases.
Is this just another flu?
RSV infections are also on the rise.
Give it one more try. Booster in me. Kids can't realize no escape from RSV, oh Mandy. The warnings you gave are just taken. Does mommy hear what you say, oh Mandy? Just head, just repeat what you're saying. This mama needs you today, oh Mandy.
Not many people have gotten the flu shot or the COVID shot. How concerned are you? 15% of adults have received that updated shot.
Public trust has gone away. Give me four more tests today.
And third, people are still getting long COVID.
Gathering the stats. Numbers climbing. Oh, Biden needs a surge. So who is reminding us, Mandy? The warnings you give are just taken. No mommy's fear what you play. Oh, Mandy, you and Judy's guidance are shaken. Mama needs you today. Oh, Mandy.
Today I'm directing the Director of the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Services to develop media literacy tools for K-12 in our public schools.
Ultimately what it is it's about machine learning.
This will teach students and even teachers to help understand how to spot conspiracy theories and misinformation, disinformation, and online hate.
And so the machine is taught.
Start talking about what we're seeing out there.
And part of the issue here is what information is going into the machine. What then will be produced in terms of decisions and opinions that may be made through that process?
Give the teachers the tools they need to help these conversations in school.
We understand the technology. Do we know what is going into these things?
And by teaching younger New Yorkers about how to discern between digital fact and digital fiction, we can better inoculate them from hatred and the spread of it, and help prepare them for a very fast-moving and confusing
what
world.
What is in the best interest of the health and safety and well-being of the people of our country?
Who was telling the truth?
Yes.
What was the reality? Chris grasped the country.
The lasagna of lousy.
You know what you did.
He liked beer.
And kind of a wind-up to the F word. Kind of a...
Every story has three sides.
No. Every city in America has a Trump hotel.
And both parties are in danger of winning.
Danger of winning.
But it can be worse. You can actually kill somebody's cat and puncture their tires to get them to shut up.
I had one beer.
Technology is the big question, whether or not it is making it people happy.
Lies, smears, besmirchment, the character assassination, and frankly, the bludgeoning of
versionary blame. The other person tactics when he himself.
Who was telling the truth?
Yes.
What was the reality?
Ooh, look what they found.
I had one beer.
Because we've got facts and then we've got feelings.
Nope, it was one beer.
One beer. All right, and boofing is not flatulence.
You know what you did.
The best podcast in the universe.
Adios. Mofo.
Dvorak.org/NA.
The show's over.